This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Well, there's a first time for everything. Boom. There's a first time for everything. Even though I said at an earlier time that I never wanted to discuss this whole agnostic atheism ordeal, I feel it prevalent now based on the debate that happened yesterday and the subsequent Twitter back and forth, which has been hilarious to read. If you haven't read it, it's a lot of fun. Duke, I don't know if you're watching by chance, but if you are, we have invited you, both of us on Twitter. Haven't heard a response yet, but you're more than welcome to join. Steve has sent you the link. You can check it in, I believe you sent it on Twitter, right, Steve?
Yes, sir.
So you can check your Twitter and join us anytime, and we'll get your side. We always like to open it up and not feel like we're having to talk behind anybody's back, but Steve has a lot to say, which is nothing different from any other day. Just this centers around him, so I'm sure he's gonna be happy to go full blast. No, not Duke Bonanza, the Duke. Steve, you want to take a second and let me knock these announcements out of the way, and then I'll let you tell what happened yesterday. So a lot of people are asking about the points. You can do the you can check your points in the live chat. I'm going to try to get together by this weekend. It's a lot of back and forth with this chatbot thing while I'm trying to get used to it. But you'll be able to trade those points in for things like a free super chat, so you don't have to pay for it. You can just send it to me and we'll read it on the show. Merchandise in the Non-Sec Shop, which you can go and check out by going to nonsecshow.com/merch. That's nonsecshow.com/merch. The Reds Rhetoric shirt's there. The Radical Homosexual shirt is there, the Nun, classic Nun shirts there, the ever classic Elephant and Pine Tree shirt is back. So you can check that out. And then we've got the Captain Hoven shirt. Reese, Dooku, Steve will explain that in just a second. He'll explain which Duke it was, but it's probably not the one that you're thinking of. Does number one get dinner with Kyle? Unfortunately not. I can't cheapen myself by auctioning myself off. I just wouldn't feel right. It would go against my, what do they call those, Steve? Old fashioned Southern principles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it. I'm just kidding. I don't have any principles. If it's high enough, we'll go out to dinner for sure.
I'll do it for $1.50.
There you go. You know, now that you've said that, you're gonna have to pony up.
Yeah,
you realize that, right?
They're not getting lucky though. Yeah, they're not getting lucky.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's the points. Because of the scheduling, our private hangout this weekend, and Steve's debate yesterday, I had moved it to 4, but I wasn't thinking about Steve's debate. So that will be this weekend. We'll make up for it this weekend. So if you are one of our patrons, you will. Get to do that this weekend with us. We'll just switch that around. I'm sorry about that schedule mix up, but I that was my fault. I completely forgot Steve had a debate yesterday. And I think that's all that I have. Speaking of debates, Steve went on Modern Day Debates channel yesterday, and very rarely does Steve debate. That's the first thing that we need to get across. It's a very rare occurrence. It's like the eclipse. It comes around once every now and then, and when it does, something major, you know, it's a major event, and this is no different. So I'll let Steve explain who his opponent was, how he come to find his opponent, and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty of what happened on Modern Day Debate yesterday.
Well, Steve? I can just say this. I won. Thank you for joining us tonight. Dave, take us out. There you go. yeah, I don't debate very often. People know way back when I had a couple debates. My first debate was with Wayne Fillmore. He comes around every so often. He was a youngest creationist that I kept happened to like as a friend who challenged me to a debate. And I was like, okay, let's do this. I had prepared for a couple weeks because when I do it, figured if I'm going to start doing debating, I'm going to prepare for them. And as people know now, Wayne, a couple hours later, recognized the fact that I was correct. It was on the topic of macro evolution and if macro evolution is observed. And he realized that that it was the truth, and he eventually left Young Earth Creationism. My second debate was with Ronnie through empiricism, who challenged me on ATP synthase and turbine theory, and something that I have a little knowledge of those topics. And I basically schooled him on that to the point where he left during the middle. So this was a rare occurrence where I actually will do a formal debate. And I had put out on Twitter, if somebody wants to debate me on this particular topic, that atheism, agnosticism are somehow one and the same, or atheism is assumes agnosticism, just let me know. I would be happy to have a debate on this. And he was the only one that responded, really, and his name was Duke the Man. And he kind of changed the topic a little bit, which was fine. We agreed. I think James, the Modern Day Debate, he did a wonderful job. He was in constant communication. No problem with the topic or the moderation. Wonderful channel. Had a great time. But the topic was kind of migrated to be how is atheism and agnosticism used and how it should be used. And I'm fine with that topic. If you had watched the debate, though, we never got to the second part of why I think it's more valuable to use the terminology that I do in philosophical context. That would have been a really awesome discussion to have because I think that's important. I thought the first part of just establishing how they're used was not going to take very long. But unfortunately, Duke knew so little about the information, so little about the topic, that I literally had to spend about 2 hours just informing him of the terminology of how it's used, whether he accepted the terminology for himself is irrelevant. I had to establish that this is exactly what is found in the literature. The problem was he didn't know what the terms like literature meant. When I said something along the lines of the literature, he had no idea. He was comparing it to like the Bible. Well, if something's in the Bible, does it make it true? Well, I'm not saying that it's true because it's in the literature. What I'm saying is it is true that it's in the literature. And there's a distinction to be made there that I think was lost upon him. So, we got some time stamps here of some highlights of the debate. Now, again, there's so much in the debate that I just randomly picked some spots. I would highly recommend go actually watching it on Modern Day Debates channel, and I'm also going to be doing it as a podcast tonight. But I I'm happy to answer anybody's questions on it, because I think we never really got out of first gear on it. I think that, unfortunately, because we're so bogged down on me trying to explain to him the terms that he didn't understand, that it wasted a lot of time, because I got pushback on things I did not expect to get pushback on. He didn't understand things like proposition. He didn't understand what truth apt meant. He didn't understand what a epistemic status was. He didn't know what belief even meant. I mean, he argued at one point that theism is not even a claim, which was astounding to me. I mean, I've never met an atheist who thinks that way. I know one theist who thinks that way, but I've never met an atheist who argues that theism is not a claim. It's pretty ubiquitous, even among the atheist communities, that a theist is somebody who claims that God exists, that they hold a belief that God exists. So that's how basal it got to be. That's how bottom of the barrel that we were dredging here. So I felt kind of bad that I had to go that low of fruit, but he was the only one that responded. And I was perfectly happy to explain things to him. But then the next day on Twitter, it denigrated to the point of absurdity, because he went on to try to save face, trying to convince people that I didn't know the topic, trying to convince me that I was dishonest. He had used that term four times in our discussion, that I was dishonest. And never quite explained what I was dishonest about, except that he would say that I didn't understand his position, and then later on saying that he knew that I knew his position, which was confusing. But how about we just kind of jump into some screen grabs here, some timestamps of the video, and then if people want to like ask about more, I'm happy to do so, because I really think we didn't get to the crux of the arguments. I had a lot more prepared, and we didn't get to, I would say, over half of it, unfortunately. Well, I'm not going to do that tonight, but if you have questions if you weren't sure of what I was trying to explain, please ask me, because I was a little rushed. James was in a hurry. I get that.
There's a gentleman named, do you know, are you familiar with Luke Costello?
No, but I told him if he wants in later, he could.
Yeah. I told him that, he's going to send me an email, and I'm going to send him a link to come in about 30 minutes.
I will take on anybody. Yeah. So if anybody wants to join on this, you're more than welcome to. I'm not going to block you because you think I'm wrong. I'm not going to chain block you either.
And Neil, I will check Twitter for your message. Where'd you send it to? 604? I'm not seeing it.
Oh, it's 604? Anyway, send it to you? That's somebody different. You talking about Neil 864? Yeah, I know Neil. Okay. Does he want to come in?
I don't know.
Oh, and Tom wants to come in too. Yeah, Tom said he wants to debate me on this on Modern Day Debate. And I was like, well, we're doing a thing on tonight. And I told James, if T-Jump wants to come in, I'm happy to have a discussion with him on this. That's fine. So Tom could come in as well. But let's jump into the video real quick and get some time stamps. At least we can show people kind of what the discussion was about. Dave, we want to just go in the order that I gave them, I guess, to you. Bring duct tape, guys. It's just pretty bad.
School, your definition, I understand how you use the word.
So, all right, so let me clarify here, because I want to make sure that we're on the same page here. Sure. My argument...
I can hear it.
Is one of my many arguments is very simple, that if you go read the literature, atheism is much more used... Again, I'm going to avoid words like definition. Much more used... be understood as the positive belief that gods do not exist. And I'll give you my citations.
Okay.
Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, Internet Encyclopedia of Philosophy, Cambridge, Oxford's Learner, Merriam-Webster's Learner, Dr. Oppie, Dr. Flew, Dr. Mosley, Dr. Malik.
And argument from authority. Others.
So, I mean, I could bring argument you citations if you wish. I don't think that you really want me to right now.
No, okay. That's fine. No, that's fine that you have your own citations.
I can't believe, Steve, you're using all of these fallacies already in this debate.
I know. I'm just a horrible person for actually sourcing my material.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I know. A bad, bad man. I know you didn't even disagree with that.
Right. I disagree with that.
No. Do you have any evidence that that's not how it's used in philosophy?
No, I'm not arguing about how it is used in philosophy. I'm arguing that use is wrong.
Okay. Well, one step at a time, because, again, my argument is, first, not if it's right or wrong, because those are value judgments. I am stipulating that anybody can go look at this and see that if you go read the literature, right, yes. The academics for the last couple hundred years, uh-huh. If you read a paper, when you see the word atheism or atheist, it's best understood by the context of the writer that it is someone who believes that God doesn't exist, or that the belief that God does not exist, right? If you're atheist and you're the person. So do you accept that, typically speaking, in philosophy, in the academia, that's how that word is typically used, right or wrong? Do you agree that that's how it's typically used?
I would have to agree with you. I haven't read your literature, but I'd have to agree with you that that's how it's used.
Okay. All right. So let's establish this right off the bat. He hasn't read any literature. He hasn't read a paper on this. He doesn't know the terminology. He just agrees that that's the way it is in the literature. And then he says that it's wrong. So my question is this: how do you say something is in the literature that's wrong if you haven't read it? Are you just going by what you think it means? And to be wrong, that is a, like I said, a value judgment. If I say that 1 + 1 = 3, that is a wrong statement. You can actually look in the math and see that 1 + 1 = 2 is an objective fact in mathematics, right? So when he says that it's wrong, I was trying to find out if he meant that it's just wrong, that they need to go fix it, or it's wrong that it's not in there. And it was very difficult to suss that out with him, but he never explained why it's wrong. When you're saying that the whole body of evidence out there in the academia and the literature is wrong, you need to bring a pretty substantial or substantive argument, because that is like a creationist saying, hey, look, evolution's wrong. And then you say, well, why is evolution wrong? Well, because I disagree with it. Well, that's not what makes it wrong. You can disagree with evolution all you wish, but that is how evolution is taught in the literature, as in like a change of electric frequency. That's something that is non-debatable. That is how it's actually taught. And he's just saying that he accepts that, although he doesn't read in the literature, but it's wrong. And I think that kind of set the whole tone for the discussion, because he never explains why it's actually wrong beyond that he thinks it's confusing and he doesn't like it. Well, that doesn't make something wrong. Okay, next.
Next. I'm just being a dick. Oh, that's a great
used in modernity.
That's a great.
So even though etymologically, yes, it is without gods, and it is true that all atheists are without gods, but so are other positions that are non-atheist. Right, agnostic is without gods, and agnostic is not atheism. But these words, like you said, do change, right? I have no problem with the words changing.
Right.
But for the last 300 years, this is how the word is accepted to be in the philosophical literature. And what you're saying is not just, I think it should be used differently, like Flew argues. You're making a value judgment and say it's used incorrectly.
Right. I mean, if I think a word...
By what objective standard are you saying that it's incorrect? You're saying all philosophy is wrong. Why?
Sir. If I think a word should be used a certain way, that would mean people who use it differently would be incorrect.
Okay, but you're making a value judgment.
Pause.
Okay, so this is where it's really confusing. Just because you don't like the way something's being used does not make something wrong. And I think he failed to make that distinction. If I have the belief that, again, 1 + 1 = 3, I can say that is wrong. If I have the belief that I prefer Democrats over Republic, or Republicans over Democrats, that's not right or wrong. Those are value judgments to be had there. You can argue the merits of the positions. You can argue the merit of the parties involved if you're Republican or Democrat, but you can't say that, you know, it's wrong for me to be a Democrat. I mean, or wrong for me to be Republican. And I think that's what he was going with, that it's wrong to use these types of terminologies because the literature is wrong for having these types of terminology in there. That's a bold claim for somebody who doesn't understand the literature, doesn't know what the literature meant, and doesn't understand the terminology being used. So this is why we really never got very far in this discussion, because we had to go into the bare basics of what some of these things meant. And later on, I'll show some screenshots of him on Twitter, where he says, you know, he understands all this stuff, and then he's asking questions clearly that he doesn't understand. And so I find that to be disingenuous, that you're saying that you understand a topic that you have to ask the most basic questions. If I say I understand biology to a limited degree, I mean, I'm going to say basic, you know, first, second year college stuff, nothing extravagant. But if I say I understand biology, and then I say, well, evolution just means change, then I don't really show that I have an understanding of evolution. If I say that, you know, DNA has 6, 7, 8 nucleotides rather than 4, it probably will demonstrate that I really don't understand genetics too much. This is the
degrades in water, Steve, by the way.
It's what?
It degrades in water, by the way.
It dissolves in water. Yeah, we're gonna have to go back to that one of these days. We're gonna have to have
that. I believe I heard from a long haired person of who thinks empiricism is very true that it degrades in water.
The guy that I actually debated that didn't understand turbine theory nor ATP synthase.
ATP,
that guy?
Man.
Yeah.
ATP
mainate. Yeah, he's never rescinded that, by the way. He still holds that to this day, that DNA just goes into water and degrades, and yet we're still able to do PCR reactions. We're still able to sequence things, even though it's degraded DNA. He never explained how that worked, ever.
Why would he need to rescind it when he's correct, Steve?
I don't know if you ever knew this, but do you know that Ronnie actually, when he first got to the community, claimed to have a master's degree, and that he... the first day, and then he got challenged on that, and then he said he changed it, and he said, well, no, what happened was I went to college and I took biochemistry, but I walked in the first day and it was so easy that I just left.
Yeah, and I'm an astrophysicist.
I can tell you from experience, I haven't had much organic chemistry before. I have dealt with nobody in the history of mankind has ever walked into a biochemistry class and said, yeah, this is easy. Never.
Whatever.
Yeah. And anyways, next timestamp.
That was sarcasm, by the way. I don't really believe DNA degrades in water. I was mocking someone.
But he does believe that we didn't go to the moon.
Yeah, we didn't go to the moon. That's true.
Yeah, clearly. Kind of weird. And you have an atheist who doesn't believe that God doesn't exist, which is, again, kind of weird in philosophy, right? If in philosophy, theist is somebody who believes there's a God, and an atheist is somebody who believes there's not a God, if you're a weak theist, you have a theist now who doesn't believe there's a God, and you have a weak atheist who is just atheist who doesn't believe there's not a God. That's some of the problems. But let's get into your issues here. Do you know what a theological and a cognitivist is?
No, I don't think I need to in this discussion.
Well, if you want to talk about, again, my argument from the very beginning, and I stipulated this, if you use your terminology, you have to accept the baggage that comes along with it. So here's some of your baggage. A theological and a cognitivist is somebody who thinks the propositions are not propositions. Hang on, Dave. I don't want to go to the actual argument because it's kind of relevant at this point, but I wanted to note that here's somebody who says, I don't have to know about this. If I'm bringing to the table an argument by which I am saying the way you're using these words will lead to category errors, and I will explain that using a logical argument, if you don't know what something like theological cognitivist is, you're not going to understand the argument. And then he says that he does understand. And then you'll see in here in a second here. You want to show the screenshot that I gave you, Dave? The first one? Yeah, he says, you know, he understands this, but then he says, could you give an example of a non-cognitivist? Is that a person with mental problems? No, this is how far removed he is from the actual topic. A theological and a cognitivist is somebody who thinks that what we would consider to be a proposition is not actually a proposition. They would think that the entire discussion of God talk is meaningless. It has no cognitive meaning. Therefore, when you say something like God exists, that's not a proposition to them. That's a theological cognitivist. There's a relationship to that to be a moral non-cognitivist. A moral non-cognitivist would somebody be an emotivist, prescriptivist, expressivist, and there's a few other ones, projectivist. But these positions are basically saying that stealing is wrong doesn't actually express a moral proposition. It's more akin to saying boo on stealing if you're a motivist, or don't steal if you're a prescriptivist. So that's looking at it in an entirely different way. So that's how a non-cognitivist looks at something. It has nothing to do with mental problems. So he says he understands, but at the same time, he doesn't. And I really felt like I had to explain so much, and yet he's arguing against me not understanding the terminology, and then just saying that I fiat that I'm somehow wrong and that the literature is wrong. And this is where I think there was a huge disconnect.
I'd like to read my favorite tweet, if I could.
Yes, please.
From this whole I got to find it now. Do you have anything to say real quick? It's going to take me a second.
Well, we can go to the next clip. I think we have one last clip. It's not very long.
And then I'll send Tom and Luke, I'll send you your links here in just a second. We'll bring you in.
Arguing, you haven't researched this as well as you need to actually make understand. The arguments that you're trying to make.
You have to explain what I'm not understanding.
Okay.
Because I don't have to go to any papers. I got you. I want tell me what I'm not understanding.
Okay. Do you accept, again, in philosophy, I'm going to read it to you verbatim.
I don't know anything about philosophy. We're not talking about philosophy.
We are talking. That's it in a nutshell. He doesn't know anything about philosophy, and yet these are philosophical topics. Whether you like it or not, these deal with philosophy. You're not going to go into discussion talking about genetics and say, well, that has nothing to do with biology. You're not going to go into discussion talking about Big Bang cosmology and saying that has nothing to do with astrophysics. These are philosophical concepts. These are terminology that deal with philosophical terminology. When you're talking about existence, you're talking about existential claims. When you're talking about ontology, that's a being, that has to do with philosophy. When you're talking about truth, that's philosophy. When you're talking about facts, that's philosophy. When you're talking about knowledge, that's philosophy. All these things deal with philosophy. You can't get away from that. You can't extricate the topic of atheism and agnosticism and theism from philosophy. That's literally what the topic involves. And so for him to say that I don't know anything about philosophy, and he hasn't read any of the papers, hasn't read any of the literature, what the hell was I debating with him? I mean, I wasn't talking to somebody who was competent enough to even have a discussion, I think, on the topic, more or less a debate. And I wasn't trying to be disparaging. If you watch the debate towards the end, I mean, it got exponentially worse because he got frustrated because he wasn't understanding. But I was trying to explain to him. But the next day, he's on Twitter. Then I was like, no holds barred, because he literally was saying, "With I didn't have an understanding. I didn't know what he was arguing. I know his arguments, that I was being dishonest." And that's where I draw the line. Look, you can disagree with me all you want, but I'm very honest about my opinions. I'm very honest about my approach, and I've read the material. And so You cannot call me intellectually dishonest. I mean, you can say I'm a shitbag. You can call me smug. You can call me arrogant. You can call me a piece of shit. I don't care about any of that crap. But I will not accept you calling me dishonest.
I was going to say, you're not dishonest, but you're just hashtag smug sleeve. Actually, somebody made Smitty had a really good idea. We're going to, in the non-sex shop sale, smugs, Steve mugs.
With, smugs. I love that. Yeah. That is good.
Yeah.
Smitty, I love that. Smugs. That is genius. Holy shit. Kyle, why don't you think about it? You're the smart one on this creative stuff.
I can't do it.
Missed out on that one.
here's my favorite tweet. This is from Duke last night. It says, actually, that was from earlier this morning. I would love to debate you again, Steve. Thank you for proving to Twitter that you are intellectually dishonest and incapable of understanding other people's positions. You, sir, are pathetic.
Yeah.
All right. Now I'm going to send your links out, guys. Luke and
Zero says you call other people dishonest for using different definitions pretty frequently, though. No, I don't. This is absolutely wrong. People have used different definitions. I mean, in fact, I praise people that actually can explain the topic pretty well. Genetically modified skeptic, he uses colloquial terminology. He's not a dishonest person. I understand his argument and why he does. It makes sense. But he also understands the philosophical terminology, and that's the goal. My goal in that debate, when I even said at the beginning, if you watch it, my goal is to get people to understand the topic, the material facts. And then the second part was supposed to be utility. We never got to the utility. I was talking about the material facts because he never moved on past that, because he was literally challenging me on things that I didn't even expect him to be challenging me on, like theism is a claim he doesn't accept. And then he didn't know the difference between, he thought there was a difference between I believe X, I accept X, I affirm X, I think X. Those are all still epistemic positions on a proposition that mean the same thing, that you agree with the proposition. And he really couldn't understand what affirm meant. If I say I affirm P, he had no idea what that meant.
Answer, this is interesting. Answer this, Steve. Debate topic. How the words are and should be used. Steve didn't address this on the level Duke was coming from at all, only his own. And you also bitched about it on Twitter, issues, etc. Big wine fest.
I know how he was using it. We never passed. The first part of the discussion was supposed to be in how they're used. We never got past that because he couldn't establish how they were used. He was saying how it's wrong. And then he would say a few times that these things are not that way in some way. And I'm like trying to establish what does he understand about the literature. We never got past any of that because he'd never read the literature. How do you have a discussion on something if you've never read anything about it? How do you have a debate on that? I don't know where to go with that.
I do it all the time.
Yeah, well, on this show, we do that a lot. Yeah, granted. But, well, you're not in a lot of debates. I mean, you've debated a couple times, but there have been topics you know about.
Yeah, which is...
No offense, but how much do you have to study up to debate G-Man?
Cinnamon Toast Crunch and being gay.
That's
got
it.
This in the bag.
You know about those two, you're good to go.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, how's it going? Tom.
Good. Welcome
you
back.
You guys hear me all right?
Yep. Yeah.
Cool.
And we'll wait on Luke, too. Tom, you can go ahead and I don't know. I've been talking to Luke, so I don't know, Tom, what you wanted to say, but please feel free to go ahead and do it, and then Luke will come in and we'll have just a conversation. Luke, I sent it to you in your email. I replied to that email, so just check that, and then you can click that and come in.
Well, my major criticism of Steve would be is that he uses too many big terms that the other people don't understand. If you're really trying to convince somebody, you need to use their language and not your language, which is why he got stuck in trying to explain all the different terms to Duke, because Duke didn't know any of those terms. So I think you should have tried to use Duke's language more instead of your own. But I agree. Steve is right that the definition of atheism that he proposes is the one used in philosophy. But the question is which one has more utility, which is the better definition to use? Or I forget what the phrasing you used was, Steve. It was something like, which is the better usage? And I think Duke is correct that his definition is the better usage because it is easier to understand for most people.
All right. Well, first, this was a debate. This was not me talking to a bunch of second graders. So what words did I use were too big for him that you thought?
Affirm. He didn't know what affirm meant.
Affirm is too big a word for my opponent.
I think you should always use language that's at the level of your opponents. You should match whatever it is they understand, not use words that would be appropriate in a debate.
Okay, so you think affirm was too complicated. Okay, so why would I debate somebody on a topic of philosophy that's going to be dealing with atheism, which, as you agree, deals with propositions, where they don't know something as basic as that?
I have no idea. You accept the debate.
You're no longer debating them. Yeah, but at that point, is it really a debate? I mean, it'd be kind of like having a discussion about math and calculus when he doesn't know basic arithmetic. I mean, I don't think affirm is really that complicated a word. Now, I'll take the hit for the theological cognitivist, but that was because I was going to give him arguments about why the value stuff was not the way I would use these terms, because you have to accept the baggage by using colloquial terminology. And that is, as I think you even probably would recognize, is a baggage you have to accept by it, correct?
Right. Do
you know my argument on that?
Okay. I don't know your argument specifically, but I do know there are definitely philosophical arguments that leads to contradictions and problems when you use atheism to be a lack of belief.
Okay.
But I don't know your argument specifically, if you want to present it.
Well, I had it in the video. Did you watch the entire debate?
I watched most of it, but I didn't get to the end. I didn't get to the Q&A.
Oh, it got worse. Oh, you should have, because it was just like progressive, exponential, holy crap. So my argument was this. Theological cognitivist is a non-cognitivist position. In other words, what we would consider to be a proposition, they don't consider a proposition. It's all moral. It's all nonsensical talk to them. They don't think that any of it's cognitive and meaningful. Atheism, you would agree, is a cognitive position, right? Because we can express it either as a positive or a negative belief. But either way, it relates to a proposition, right?
Yeah.
So it's a cognitive position. Okay. So how do you, even though they both don't have a God belief, how do you take a cognitivist category and put a non-cognitivist position in it? That clearly is a category error.
Right. That's the embedding problem.
Well, no, that's not the embedding problem. The embedding problem is Frege, which is that you can't have that. We talked about, well, you saw that on my Facebook there. The embedding problem has to do with the fact that if you're a theological cognitivist, how do you make constructive arguments using logical frameworks to have complex sentences come out of simple sentences? Because if stealing is wrong or murder is wrong, then lying is wrong. Murder is wrong, therefore lying is wrong. That's fine as a cognitivist point of view. But if I think that murder is wrong, it's not cognitive. I think it's a theological and cognitivist point of view. And you think it's something like boo stealing, then that no longer holds any value. It makes no sense to say that I can formulate a complex argument and complex structure from the simple structures, because now I have boo stealing, don't murder. It doesn't follow that way. That's Frege's embedding problem.
Right, because you can't take a non-cognitive position and put it into a cognitively meaningful proposition.
Right. And so that's
which is similar, or very similar to what's happening here with the definition of atheism.
Okay, I'll grant you that. It's tangentially related. I'll grant you that. But I wouldn't have used that with him, because granted, he's not going to understand Frege's embedding problem. But I was trying, like you said, you have to talk in the language that he's using. I thought it was pretty simple when I was saying, look at cognitivist position, non-cognitivist position. Okay, it's like this. They don't go together. You know, it's kind of Kyle and I. It's like that.
Well, I think cognitivist is one of the words that was too complicated for him. You should have just said, these people think it means something and these people think it doesn't mean something.
Yeah, well, I did. I eventually did. When he actually said, can we not use the word can we say what it actually entails? And I did, and I changed it to something else. Because I even told him at the very beginning, this is what I thought was funny, dude. He didn't like the word belief, but then he said, we have to understand that these are beliefs. And then I changed it to affirm, and he didn't like that. And so he said, no, use belief. And a couple times I messed up because I'm so used to saying affirm, and that's I take the
you used it by habit.
He asked me to use belief. Yeah, I used it by habit. I really did. Fair enough. But I told him, what word do you want to use for somebody that accepts the proposition? Make something up. My arguments mostly have been matter of form, not semantics. When I argue with a lot of atheists, they want to argue semantics, meaning the words, what they have meanings for it. And I don't think that it matters to the uses of the form. You know, I can symbolize something as of all S that no P. I don't have to instantiate what S is as who it is or what the proposition is, right? So when I'm having a discussion with him, I'm trying to explain to him, make me a word up if you want. Give me a word for somebody that just thinks the proposition's true. Anything. It took him 5 minutes just to get around that.
Right. He also had some problems when you used belief for some reason, because I would have just gone with belief the entire time.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm not making that up. I really thought that at the very beginning, and I watched it twice, and I still think this, because I went back. He did have a problem with belief at the very beginning. And then later on, he said, well, don't use accept, use belief, right?
Don't use affirm, use belief.
That's what I heard. Don't use affirm. Yeah. Don't use affirm, don't use belief. I'm sorry. Yeah. So it was really confusing, because I even asked him, do you believe that I exist? He's like, yeah. So he seemed to have an issue with whatever epistemic status you want to have toward that proposition, whatever predicate you want to use, whether belief or accept or affirm or whatever. To me, I have no qualms with using any of them. They're all synonymous to me. I don't see a distinction between any of them. If you're a logician and you think there's a distinction, please let me know. I'd like to know. I mean, there's some, obviously, there's maybe a pendant type view of looking at it, that a belief could be a psychological thing. But for all practical purposes, they all mean that you accept the proposition to be true, right?
Yeah. He didn't understand that. It was just like talking Japanese to him. It's a word he didn't have any idea what it meant.
So why would he debate a topic if he didn't even know any of that?
Well, I think most people, like, why does Kent Hovind debate evolution?
Well, he's just a dishonest piece of shit. That's why. I'm not saying Duke is dishonest. I just think he's he was inept in this area. But I don't think he's a dishonest guy.
All right. Well, what I mean is, many people debate things that they're not qualified in. I mean, a lot of the people on our channels debate things that we're not necessarily qualified in. It's just we debate because we enjoy it, even if we aren't necessarily qualified. And there are people who present new information to us because they're more qualified, and we don't necessarily realize that. And so I think that's what happened with Duke, was is that, like, the Dunning-Kruger effect. He thought he was qualified in the debate, and you presented a lot of new information that he wasn't prepared for, but he didn't know he wasn't prepared for it.
Yeah, and you know, I find I agree with you that, you know, we're not, none of us are experts in any of these fields, and that's fine. I don't think you have to be to debate something. I really don't. I think the layperson debates are even more interesting than the expert ones some of the times. So no, you don't have to be an expert in any of these topics by any stretch of imagination. I like the amateur ones, but even the amateur ones, you have to understand something about the topic. I mean, if you're going to be discussing to me basic calculus, right, and we're talking about differentials and derivatives and things like that nature, and then you say, well, what's an exponent? I'm going to be a little hesitant to think that you understand the topic, right? I'm going to be a little reserved on that, would I not be?
Absolutely. But I think his perspective was that the philosophy and the colloquial definitions are two completely separate realms, and he's using the colloquial definition, and all these problems that you're presenting, the philosophical contradictions and of using the prefix A, really never applied in his life experience when he's using the term atheism and in the colloquial usage. And so they were kind of not really applicable to his understanding of the way atheism is used, because he's never had to deal with these kinds of things in an actual real world conversation.
I agree with that. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. But here's the issue. It doesn't take away from the material facts, right? And I think you even would agree the material facts, I'm gonna put, I just one, two, and three, but the one that Stanford Encyclopedia does say that A should be used or ought to be thought as not rather than without. You've read SCP, so you know that's in there. That's a material fact. Two, by doing so, it actually makes it very coherent for the propositional way of looking at it, right? You believe P, you don't believe P. So I have the proposition, I have not the proposition. So if the proposition is God exists, the negation of that not would be God does not exist. So if I'm a theist, I believe God exists. And if I believe the negation, I believe that God does not exist. There's a coherency there. Would you agree?
Absolutely. You're definitely right about that. That's the way that's used in philosophy.
That's why I wanted to establish it with him initially. I didn't realize how much pushback I was going to be getting on that, because we all know by now that a lot of atheists out there don't even accept that much. They're like, that's not how it is in philosophy. Then when you ask them for anything that in philosophy that says otherwise, they have nothing. And for him to say that Stanford Encyclopedia is wrong after he has admitted he has never read it and knows something about philosophy, I take that to be a little arrogant, right? That's me. That's saying. Well, okay, one second. That's like a creationist saying that evolution's wrong and they never read any of the literature on it. I don't see a distinction.
Well, I think that was just – he was using the wrong word there. I don't think he meant wrong as it's like just factually incorrect. I think he meant wrong as in it doesn't invalidate his position kind of thing.
Well, I mean, see, the thing is I've never discounted the colloquial definitions, right? If somebody says I just merely lack a belief and I'm an atheist, I've never said that you're not an atheist in my entire time on YouTube. This is a huge problem that some other atheists think that I've argued, and I've never argued that. If you can go back and watch any of my videos, I've never said, you're not a true atheist. No, I'm like, okay, you're an atheist, but you have to accept the baggage that goes along with it. And then I would give him arguments about like rocks being atheists and things of that nature. Jim Majors changed that position, right? When he came to the community, he was like, yeah, well, rocks are atheists because atheism means not theist. But after he looked at the logic, and he's like, oh, what? Damn, you know what? That doesn't make any sense.
He didn't really say that.
Yeah, Yeah. When he first got to this, I'm not kidding. When he first got this community, he was under the Bionic Dance School of Philosophy, which rocks are atheist. And I was like, Jim, let me help you through this, because I really like Jim a lot, right? I mean, he's a great guy. And so rocks. He finally worked past it. He's realizing that, yeah, that's a really bad argument, because we want to know somebody's beliefs, right? And we want to know what their ontological considerations are. We're not asking you what you have in common with a stupid rock, right? Do you really want to say that atheists are rocks? I mean, it just doesn't help the atheist movement at all. It makes you look silly.
Here's a question that I heard the other day. Are babies atheists?
Yeah, and by the same token, using the same analogy, then they would say babies are atheists. But that's a problem with that as well, because you can't assign a theological position to something, a baby who's just not aware of the proposition or understands it. They have no cognitive ability to understand. They have no executive decision-making abilities. They have no higher functions. So to me, it's no different than a theist saying, hey, my child was born a believer because of Romans 1. It's just nonsensical. I mean, I look at the Graham Oppie way of looking at it, with babies are born innocent. They don't have evaluation one way or another. They're not agnostic. They're not theist. They're not atheist. All you can say about them is that they're not atheist. That you can factually say, right? Because
Cinnamon Toast Crunch would have to be theist, because it takes too heavenly to not be.
I'm going to try that one of these days.
So you need to.
It better be really good.
We've got two people joining us here. We've got Chris and Luke that are also here to join the conversation. Chris, you popped in first. We'll hear from you first, and then Luke will go to you, and we'll try to get everybody's. I know this people probably want to jump in. Just be mindful of who's talking and let them finish, and then we'll give everybody enough time to say whatever they want to say. I'll try to moderate and keep things clear. But Chris, go ahead and say what you got to say, man.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so my name is Chris, and I haven't done this before. I haven't been online debating like this before, so this is my first time on the show.
Welcome.
But I I happened to watch the debate with the Duke, and I finally understood why it is that, I mean, okay, so for the past few weeks, you know, I watch your show a lot for the Flat Earth stuff. I find it interesting how people could believe what they do. But every once in a while, I would see a stream with you, Steve, and you would be arguing these philosophical issues. And I'd wonder, why are people even interested in this stuff? And so once I finally got a chance to watch your debate with the Duke, I finally felt this passion of why people would be arguing with you on this. And so I just wanted to come in to say that it was, from my perspective, it's as if you don't believe, it's as if you've never met people who believe that academic philosophy is not useful. And, you know, I'm one of those people who believe it's not really useful, academic philosophy. So that's okay. That's why I want to bring my perspective to it. And that's why I think I understand the Duke's position more than you did.
Awesome.
I like Chris already.
I do run into those people all the time. Do you value something? Do you value truth? Do you value facts? And do you value knowledge? Those are all philosophical terms. You're now talking about philosophy. So if you say that you don't value philosophy, then you're saying that none of those terms really have any value to you.
No, that's not what I said. I was specific. I was careful to say academic philosophy because I'm trying to make a distinction between the philosophy that everyone uses on a daily basis, the thought process and all of that, and academic philosophy, which is studied in college and that people major in and become professionals in. So I'm saying that type, there's a type of academic philosophy that I don't believe is really useful.
I don't see a distinction. If I'm talking to you about truth, right, then that is established by philosophy. Now, again, you can have your conversations with the average person, and I get that. But we're having a debate. Him and I were having a debate, and that debate was dealing with philosophical concepts. For example, you like science, I would assume, right? You're a smart guy. You like science, right? Okay. You agree that science adheres to methodological naturalism, right?
Sure.
Okay. That's philosophy. That philosophy is the guiding force of science. Without philosophy, you say philosophy is useless, academic philosophy is useless, then science is useless without that. So you're really destroying the foundations by which science is predicated upon by saying that you don't find any use for philosophy because it's the guiding force that makes science a tool that we can actually use.
All right. So what I would say is that normal people seem to know that they have philosophical views. They don't know the name for their position in the academic philosophy, you know, the SEP, as you would say. They don't know what definition that it would give to that their position. But people seem, I believe that people already know that they hold philosophical positions. My contention is that, let me put it like this. There is no useful type of academic philosophy that is not already being done by people who are not academic philosophers. And so, when you say scientists use philosophy, in a sense, I know. And that's why we don't need people in college studying this as a, you know, majoring in this. I would want those academic philosophers to switch and actually go into one of the sciences. That's what I think would be more helpful.
I'm a little mortified, to be honest with you. And let me tell you why. One of the biggest things in like biology is bioefficacy concerns. Ethical considerations are a huge part of genetic research and biology. Matter of fact, just recently, as you know, there's a doctor in Japan that decided to do some gene editing using CRISPR that produced two twins, right? And they don't know the full effects of these genes, especially if they procreate. And it was an unethical procedure. Matter of fact, the guy's looking at the death penalty. That is how unethical it is. These ethical considerations are dictated by philosophers who understand ethical theory, right? And they get paid a lot of money in ethical to explain to scientists efficacy issues. In business, you can make a lot of money by learning business ethics, right? Because I don't know if you've been in retail, there's a lot of ethical concerns when you're dealing with the public, just in sales and promotions and dealing with them. And you know, you don't, it's more than just the, like you put the lay person, the colloquial person just says, oh, I'm just going to not steal from the petty cash thing. Yeah, that's ethical considerations, but there's a lot more involved things with that. That's why these people that study things make boku bucks in business. And you're literally saying, don't go into those fields. You're telling people don't learn philosophy. And I find that to be a little bit disturbing, if you want my honest opinion.
Well, you said that you met people like me before, so it shouldn't be surprising.
Oh, and China. I'm sorry. Real quick. It wasn't Japan. It was China. My bad. My bad. I corrected. Yeah.
All right. So again, earlier you said that you don't see a distinction between academic philosophy and everyday philosophy. Do you still, is that what you mean?
Well, I mean, I don't know what distinction you're using it as.
I'm trying to draw a distinction.
Yeah, one's more complicated, but I mean, when we talk about philosophy, just you and I, if you don't want to talk about college stuff, what do you think that entails?
All the stuff that's not, you know, I care more about science, okay? And so there are types of scientists that you probably know of, like Lawrence Krauss off the top of my head, who does not believe that the academic philosophers are getting to the root of something important and that they're actually helping the science move forward. It's like, come on, I can think of, okay, first of all, I'm not a professional scientist, okay? But mm-hmm. I like to think of myself as an amateur theoretical physicist, all right? And so I can think of questions myself, like a lot of academic philosophers say that they're good because they're good for science because they come up with the questions that the scientists eventually answer or something. Like I can do that myself. I can come up with questions myself. It doesn't take a special skill to come up with questions. Okay. And a lot of the
I think it does. I think it does. For example, I'll give you an example. We had Lawrence Krauss on recently. Do you watch that? I assumed, right?
I didn't catch that one.
Oh really? Yeah. We had Lawrence Krauss on this show 2 weeks ago or so. Yeah, it was great. And so we didn't get into any real technical stuff, but it was awesome. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. Let me give you an example. For example, Stephen Hawking, he came out with something called modal-dependent realism in one of his books. And this position is a differentiation between scientific realism and scientific instrumentalism. Now, if you like science and I say, hey, general theory of relativity, do you hold it as a scientific instrumentalist or scientific realist position? That may not mean anything to you as a science person because you don't know what those terms mean. But to philosopher, it's critical because what that's saying is, do you actually hold that the state of affairs of the universe are literally what the model's saying? Or is it just utility? Is this useful to think so, regardless if it's actually that case or not? And the philosophers come up with those kind of questions, not science. For example, let's look at like the philosophy of time. Time falls into philosophy just as much as it does science. People don't really understand that because, and this goes to the heart of Krauss's, you know, something from nothing. Time itself can be looked at two different ways. One's called a reductionist approach with respect to time. The other is a Platonist with respect to time. This is, what is time? If I have two distinct times in the universe where there's different something's different, right? There's been movement. There's been some relational difference between some objects in the universe. I can sense a passing of time with the direction of the arrow being entropy increasing in the universe. So I sense time as an illusion. But that's the Platonists would say, even if nothing changed in the universe, there was zero change, time still passes. But what does that mean? What would it mean for time to pass if there's no change in the universe at all? These things are what philosophers talk about. These are what the philosophical questions are. So it's really critical because those questions help lead into things like the no boundary proposal that Hawking had, which allows us to model back to the T equals zero for the Big Bang cosmology. So you seem to agree initially that philosophers ask these questions that science doesn't initially ask because science tries to explain natural phenomenon using natural explanations, and they make repeated testable predictions, right? But the overall thing that science does, it falls under philosophy. Does that make sense?
Let me
interject real quick, Chris. Too, I'm gonna let you have another comment here, real quick. Then we're gonna go to Luke, and then we'll come back to open it up between the three of you to kind of just get involved in the larger conversation. But I want to make sure that we do get Luke in here in just a second. So, Chris, please go ahead.
All right, so I've heard all of those arguments before, so I have counterarguments, of course. Now, all I have to really do is just point out that, of course, scientists themselves disagree among, based on the philosophy. I mean, they have these kinds of discussions amongst themselves. They don't need a philosopher of science to come in and tell them how they're supposed to debate each other. They already know that they have disagreements on whether these are really, you know, particles of light. Do they really exist, or does it just seem like they exist? And, you know, they already have these positions. They don't have the technical name for them as defined by SEP, but they already know that these positions exist, and they debate about this stuff themselves. I mean, to the point that it's useful. Of course,
well, now they do because philosophers in the past they got it from. I mean, even induction, any logic falls on a philosophy. If you're making an inductive argument that science use, you need to understand how induction works, right? You need to understand the concept of induction. If I say something along the lines of almost all, if I have a jar of 1,000 marbles and I say almost all these marbles are blue, I pick a marble, that marble's blue. That's an inductive argument. It's a cogent inductive argument. People that are in science have to learn about philosophy to understand the logics involved in that, because they're making arguments to their other scientists. You can't say philosophy is useless, especially when logic and that kind of inductive reasoning is critical in science. That's how we learn more. That's how we gain more information. You don't gain any more information from deductive reasoning. You gain it from inductive.
Remember, my position is academic philosophy. I'm not trying to make a distinction between that and what scientists do. Okay.
But we use induction all the time in our daily lives. We have to understand that, make it the reason for it. Yeah.
We'll come back to that. Let's hear from Luke real quick.
Okay. Yep. Hi, Luke. I don't speak sign language. Well, I know a little. Hi. Yeah. You have to unmute Luke. Oh, we were so technical. We didn't have any technical problems until now. Yeah,
are you seeing any audio movement?
No, he needs to refresh. I was getting audio from him earlier and it cut out.
Okay, refresh your browser, Luke. Hopefully, now say something.
Well, it comes back.
There we go. Negative. Try unplugging your headphones. Sometimes, for some reason, that might not. Nothing. Okay. Okay. Here's what we're going to do. We'll troubleshoot this live. We'll troubleshoot this live on the show. Go up to the on your Chrome. Go up to the three dots in the corner. Click that, and then, I'm hearing something.
Can you ask him to share screen?
We can't do that. We can't share screens on this program. Luke, go up to your settings, and then click advanced settings. And then after you click advanced settings, in that first block that's titled privacy and security, and the next to the last little segment, click content settings. Okay. That'll give you options such as cookies, locations, camera, microphone. Click your microphone and make sure that it's the microphone that you want to use and that it's set to allow. Non-sec tech support. Thank you for calling non sequitur. This is Kyle. How can I help you?
You got to do a hillbilly accent.
You thought I was going to go with an Indian accent, didn't you?
I didn't say that. No, I didn't say that. I said hillbilly. You see, racist. Racist.
That
Wait,
works.
Is hillbilly racist? I don't know. That's not really a race, is it?
Probably.
Are you a race?
Today it is, probably. Not to me. I don't. I've erased the uncultured hick comment. Luke, no luck? After you set that to whatever mic you want to use, by the way, and you make sure that it's allowed, you can click. You have to click the refresh button. You have to come back in. So once you set the mic that you want to use and you allow the permission, hit refresh, and then it should work for you. Hopefully. Okay, he's refreshing. Fingers crossed, everyone. The suspense is killing me. Nothing.
Good. Nothing.
Oh, there it is.
I'm so looking forward to what he has to say, too. Yay! I'm waiting with great anticipation. Yes.
Am I on?
Yes,
you're on.
Okay, I can't hear myself in the re-recording, but I suppose that's a good thing. That caused echoes. Anyway, it's an honor to be on. Thanks for being patient with me and my technical difficulties. Hopefully my projector won't short out in the middle of this because I got a bulb that's defective. So let's hope that doesn't happen. Crossing my fingers. All right. Anyway, I am mostly a non-cognitive atheist, but I feel like that's supposing that I know all the definitions of how you could define God, and I want to keep my mind open to the idea that there could be a useful usage of the word God, so I don't strictly adhere to that school of philosophy. I think that we are all born with null hypotheses to all phenomenon, including the God phenomenon, and when presented with evidence for any phenomenon, we grow increasingly suspicious or certain in our idea of how that phenomenon operates. So, as someone who identifies with the atheist, I would say that I hold the null hypothesis and that all of the frameworks and methods that theists have used to increase their suspicion or certainty is from a flawed reasoning. Does that make sense?
No, none of what you just said made any sense. Let me try to parse it out, Luke, because you start off even confusing to me. You said you're a non-cognitivist atheist. Can you tell me what a non-cognitivist atheist would be? Because
isn't that what you were describing? Go ahead.
A non-cognitivist position would be somebody, when we say a proposition like God exists, to them, that is not even a proposition. They don't think there's any propositional content to be had there. It's meaningless to them. Like, for example, I don't know if you heard earlier, a moral non-cognitivist, when they say something like, when we say something like murder is wrong, we can say that it's true or false. It's truth apt, meaning that it can be true or it can be false, right? That murder's wrong. But to a moral non-cognitivist, that is not truth apt. There's no proposition to be true or false there. A theological non-cognitivist says God exists, is not have any propositional content to it. It is not going to be true. It not going to be false. It doesn't mean anything. An atheist, on the other hand, thinks that the proposition is meaningful. They either say that either they believe it or they don't believe it, depending on if you're a strong or weak atheist, but it's still something you can evaluate. So you can't. It makes no sense to say you're a non-cognitivist atheist.
I'll elaborate. So as with any non-fictional or with any fictional entity such as vampires, because there is no objective frame of reference with which we can reinforce our idea of this thing, the idea of vampires is a loose concept. So the looseness of the concept is what I'm trying to refer to when I say non-cognitivism. So when you say I don't believe in vampires,
when I say the word vampire, do you get into a mental image of something? Do you think of something?
Mm-hmm. I have several.
We all do. We understand what you mean by those things. Then how do you say that has no cognitive meaning? It clearly does. I mean, if I say words are signifiers that will have meaning to the listener. We're trying to convey something, right? There's no intrinsic meaning to words, but we use them and we try to convey something. So when I say the word vampire, right, do vampires exist? Or if I use the proposition, vampires exist, you understand what I mean by that because we understand in society what a vampire conceptually is, right? There's some cognitive meaning there. Yeah, Brett Keane exists. They're for vampires.
Well, we don't know if you're talking about, you know, the Twilight brand or the Nosferatu brand.
Does it matter?
You know, there's so many.
That's specificities, but that's irrelevant.
All right. Well, then if it's irrelevant, then I'll drop that out of the conversation. The principles by which I use atheism are predicated on the prefix and suffixes being used. So I wrote down something to explain this to someone, so I'm just going to read that word for word here. Isms are a belief framework. They can't be true or false. Capitalism can't be true. Cynicism can't be true. Mythological naturalism can't be true. They are frameworks of perception. They are tools we can use. So theism is the framework or belief that God exists, and A is the prefix indicating without, as in asymmetric, which means without symmetry, or amoral, which means without morality, as opposed to immorality, which means opposite. So it is not using the framework which holds the position that a God exists. This is.
I'm sorry. No, I thought you were done.
Go ahead.
Do you know what etymological fallacy is?
That is having to do with misconstruing a composition of an argument. Is that correct?
No, an etymological fallacy is saying that how a word historically was used is how we use it in modernity. The problem with your argument with the A is that's not how atheism is used. The A is thought to be negation. There are things like out there, for example, we have morals and we have immoral. We also have something called amoral. Amoral does not mean not moral, all right? I'm a moral person. Kyle is a moral person. T-Jump's a moral person. Brett Keane's an immoral person. Right. Well, except on last Saturday, I heard what Kyle did. Yeah, he's pretty immoral. But that's a different discussion to be had. But we could say one person's immoral, one person's moral, and one person's immoral. But an amoral object would be like a rock. Right. Now we can use it. We can make it like a weird thing and say a person's amoral, meaning that they just don't understand morality and they just have no moral concept. But generally speaking, a rock is neither moral or it's immoral. It's amoral. So these words, these prefixes, the Greek letter from the A, does not mean specifically any one thing. It has usages. So the term atheist, atheos, does not signify without God. What it signifies is that it's the negation of the proposition.
Well, that's where I'm disagreeing with you, because I just as you showed with morality, analogous to how it's used in, because ideally with a perfect language, all the prefixes and suffixes and all that would be used consistently. So if we already have a body of words that has a consistent usage of a prefix, then it would be in our best interest to optimize the facility or the faculty of the language to keep the usages of the root building blocks consistent. Would you agree with that?
No. What you're doing is you're arguing for lack of nuance. You're arguing for less granularity. You're arguing for some homogenization of words when words have usages that explain very specific concepts. I could not disagree with you more on that. You're basically saying there should be a one size fits all to words. And that makes no sense to me whatsoever, because when we express a word like atheist, right, we want to convey to a person what that means. Now I conveyed to somebody differently than what somebody like, Duke would do, right? Or Chris here would do. They use a more colloquial. But either way, we're trying to convey something by saying that word. You're trying to say that they must use a prefix a very specific way, when it would make no sense to call a rock immoral because it's amoral, right? You would know, if we say it's amoral, and you're saying, well, that means that it's just not a moral rock, what would that mean? It loses the precision, the fact that rocks are incapable of having morals. That's why we say they're amoral.
Yeah, and I'm saying that is analogous to how atheism is used. So it's not imtheism, you know, in relating that back to immorality. So your assertion that atheism is the assertion of the negation of P, which is a God exists, is the equivalent of M-theism, you know, if we were to use the prefix consistently.
What the hell is going on the screen?
I'm not
trying to
that.
Get no, Dave's trying to get Ozzy in here.
Ozzy
asked for link. Okay. This is where I'm getting confused. Do you at least agree with the material facts that Stanford does say that the A in atheism should be thought as not as a negation rather than without? Do you agree that actually is in Stanford, first of all?
I
assure
I
you that it is. You
don't
need me to
Stanford, but I can
okay,
take
we,
your
we
word.
Okay, we accept argument that it is? Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go.
But then right now, but it I'm not just it arguing with you. I would be arguing with them as well. So I would want to know on what principle they are using that, because that would be, to me, seem inconsistent with how the A prefix is used relative to its other usages in other words. That seems inconsistent.
Sure,
I don't like inconsistency.
And then I'll turn it over to Ozzy, but this is my explanation for that. The reason why is because we don't want atheism and theism to be a dichotomy. We want them to be what's called contradictories. And what a contradictory is something that if one is true, the other must be false, or vice versa. They both cannot be true and they both cannot be false, unlike a contrary where both can be false. This adds some kind of nuance to these positions, because a theist will say, I affirm this position, and an atheist will say, I disbelieve or I disaffirm this position. I reject it. So this allows a dichotomous state, but a contradictory state that ontologically, if it is the case that God exists or God does not exist, one of those must be true, right? It cannot be the state of affairs where both God exists and doesn't exist, you know, unless he's some kind of quantum superposition. And it cannot be the case that God, that both of them are false. One of them has to be true. Atheism or theism is part, you know, it uses by Stanford, the way I'm using it, one of them has to be true. This makes it a philosophically great question. I mean, does God exist? I mean, if you think that yes, then you're affirming that it does. If you say no, you're affirming that he doesn't, right? So it makes the question, does God exist, very simple with two direct answers, yes or no.
It's about to get really philosophical in here now. Hi, Ozzy. High five.
Oh. Yeah, wait. High five. Yeah, let's do it this way.
To your left.
Oh, I hope my hand was on the right side there. Everything is mirrored here in a weird way.
Welcome, Ozzy.
So I would agree that if we were to use the definition of atheism that I'm suggesting, that it would create a vacuum that it is currently filling quite well. And for that, I would recommend the word anti-theism to represent the usage that you're currently using atheism for.
But
can I speak to this?
Is already established. Yeah, please.
I'm an
yeah. He's anti-theist. So he and Kyle uses it the way I use it as well. So,
yeah, I am often rightly described as an anti-theist. Christopher Hitchens was an anti-theist. He used to say, "I'm not just an atheist." Hitchens used to say, "I'm not just an atheist." He used to say, "I'm also an anti-theist." That is, I am opposed to religion. I think it's wrong, and I think it's bad. So, anti-theism is an anti-theist is someone who opposes religion, right? I mean, you could in principle be an anti-theist and believe in a God. You could believe in a God and think that religions are bad, and you could even believe that it's morally bad to believe in a God, right? I mean, it would be kind of a weird thing to believe, but you could in principle. So anti-theism isn't a word that you can adopt to sub in for the position that a God doesn't exist. Atheism has been used that way for centuries now in all modern languages. So I think atheism, we should preserve that usage, if only so that when we go back and read the books from the last few hundred years in all modern languages, we know what the hell they're talking about and don't get confused. That reason alone, I think, from a conservationist standpoint, it would make sense to do it for reasons of semantic conservation. But anti-theism also is a word that is currently in use. And it means something else. It means someone who thinks that religions are bad, and on balance, we would be well rid of them. So I don't think you can use anti-theism for that.
That sounds like it would be a lot more adequately described by the word anti-religious?
Well, you could. I mean, anti-religious is another one. And then there's even a sort of, there's another word, mesotheist. A mesotheist is someone who hates God and hates the religious. That's another one that you'll hear out there.
Now, see, I think there's all kinds of ways of doing this. Do you put, I may differ on this. I think mesotheist is a subcategory of theism. To me, if you're saying that you hate God, that you have to recognize that God exists to be a mesotheist. I wouldn't know what it means to be an atheist, mesotheist.
Well, yes, but remember, when people talk about, like, for instance, I've been accused of being a mesotheist, right? Because I've been told by many Christians, well, Ozzy, you just hate God, right? So, I mean, I would never describe myself as a mesotheist, right? Because I don't think I can really get as far as hating God, except in the sense that I can get as far as hating the Joker in a Batman comic book or hating the Vulture in a Spider-Man comic book. I can hate villains, for instance, and I think God comes off
as
something.
Right, you hate the concept, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So I wouldn't describe myself as a mesotheist, but the word refers to someone who hates God and hates the religious. And so it's typically religious people who accuse someone like me of secretly believing in God, but suppressing that belief or pretending that I don't have it or something like that. I am merely a professing atheist, they would say, right? So some flavors of Christianity, for instance, insist that there aren't really any atheists. There are merely people who profess to be atheists, but in fact, they do believe. And the reason they profess is because they are mesotheists. They are God haters, but they are also God believers. You have to be a God believer to get as far as being a God hater. So yeah, Steve, you're right about that.
Real quick, Tom looks like he wants to jump in here, and I don't want to leave him out because he's been awfully quiet, which is usual for Tom. Tom, do you want to add anything on this real quick? Are you just chilling in your comfy chair?
Well, what I'd really like to see a debate on is which is the better usage and how do we define what a better usage is. Like in your discussion with Graham Opie, he said usage wins out. And I agree with that. I think that usage is really what defines what the best usage is, because it's what the people who define the language agree upon. And so I think that if the definition that Duke was using, the more colloquial definition of atheism, is adopted by the larger majority of the people who identify as atheists, then that is the better usage, even if it may not be as philosophically rigorous.
Yeah, I think you have to take what Oppie said in context, though, and then I'll let Ozzy kind of chime into that. To me, if I said, hey, look, it usage wins out, and yet the overwhelming amount of people think that theory means just a guess, and that was how we should use it, it doesn't change how we should use theory in scientific literature. Same thing with evolution. If you want to be in a group of creationists that use evolution to merely mean change, then yes, usage wins out in their little microcosm, right? They can use these terms any way they want in their microcosm. Ozzy, I don't think Opie was really saying that usage wins out, such that if we have enough people on the planet that think that a theory is merely a guess, that all scientific theories merely become guesses now. That's not the argument that I was hearing from him.
All right, I agree. Just to clarify, when I said the people who identify with the term, so the people who are using the term, the majority of the people who use the term get to define what it means. So the people who identify as atheists get to define.
Well, no.
I might have an issue with that.
Yeah, right. I have an issue with that too. The people in a group can use terminology in their group, but they don't get to define it for the set as a whole. That just makes no sense to me whatsoever. Ozzy?
Otherwise,
yeah, I don't. Yeah, that's right. there's a sort of a danger of identitarian politics coming into play here, and I've heard this a lot from people within the atheist movement. That it's atheists who get to define what the meaning of the word atheist is. That, of course, begs the question. That begs the question that the people who self-identify as atheists are correctly using the word and correctly self-identifying, and therefore are in a position to self-identify, to stipulate what the word is for everybody else. The fact is that words that are in common parlance don't belong to any particular group, right? I mean, I'll give you an example of how this kind of thing can be sort of misused. A lot of feminists will insist that feminism is simply a political and social movement that works towards the equality of women, right? The equality of the sexes, rather, right? So as to make women equal to men, right? The people in the men's rights movement use the same definition. They think that the men's rights movement is a movement that also agitates for gender equality. Okay, well, this means they're the same movement, right? I don't think that either definition is correct. I don't leave it up to feminists to define feminism, and I don't leave it up to the men's rights movement to define what a men's rights activist is and what the men's rights movement is. I think the men's rights movement is a movement that agitates for the interests of men. And they certainly at least want equality, but I don't think they would stop at equality. And I think it's the same thing for feminism. I think feminism is not merely an attempt at achieving equality. It's a movement that agitates for the interests of women, and they want at least equality, and I think that they won't stop there either. So I don't think it's up to people who adopt a label to define for everyone else what that word means. I mean, just imagine if atheists had enough political clout to start defining the religious and religiosity the way they want. There's a lot of atheists out there who are so hostile to religiosity that they define it as a mental illness. Right? Now imagine if a group of people wanted to say, well, on behalf of somebody else, the religious, that they're mentally ill, right? Well, we would think that's awful, but I think it's equally awful when the religious try to argue for themselves that they are the sane ones, that they are the moral ones. Right? I don't think that any particular group gets to dictate to everyone else. So usage wins out, but it's not usage by any particular group. Any particular group can adopt their own specialized in-house definition if they want. That's perfectly okay. The word theory really does mean guess and speculation. Right, outside of the sciences. But within the sciences, when scientists use that word, sometimes they're using it in the vernacular colloquial usage of guess and speculation, but very often they're using the word theory to bestow an honor upon a very well-established body of facts and evidence and explanation and predictive methods and all the rest of it. It's a very high honor. Right? It's not sort of the lowest level of conjecture. It's actually the highest level of corroboration we have so far achieved. So words can be used in different communities quite differently. I don't like it when atheists try to stipulate that the word atheist has to mean what they say it means. And I don't, any more than I would like it if scientists insisted that everyone who's using the word theory to mean guess or speculation was incorrect and that they needed to use it the way scientists tend to use the word. So that would be my concern there. So usage wins out. But if you're going to root for a particular usage, I think there need to be criteria other than mass appeal, right? I think that there can be criteria, especially when you're talking about philosophical concepts, such as specificity and clarity and rigor, precision. These are, I think, virtues that would motivate a person to choose atheism as a proposition over atheism as the mere lack of belief, which is just an umbrella term that encapsulates a host of various forms of non-theism and just obscures what a person's actual position is. So I mean, the reason I recommend the traditional philosophical definition of atheism as a positive position, the belief that there aren't any gods, the reason I endorse that that definition is precisely because it actually generates precision and specificity and clarity of thought. It lends understanding in a dispute between people, whereas the other does not. But I mean, that's a political battle that I could lose, and then usage is going to win out. So usage trumps everything, but it doesn't mean that you just have to sort of throw your hands up and say, well, you know, forget about it. I think you can agitate for one definition or another, or you can recognize that there are two competing definitions and that within one discourse, it means something else, and in another discourse, it means something else. Now, my own feeling is that with the vernacular and popular or colloquial usage, atheism and agnosticism are perfectly well understood. You go out into the street and, you know, you say, what's the difference between an agnostic and an atheist? And people will tell you, well, an agnostic is undecided on the question of God's existence, and an atheist is someone who thinks there isn't a God, and a theist is someone who thinks there is a God. And it's that simple. And that mirrors perfectly the philosophical distinctions that we've been making here. Whereas the lack of belief definition just subsumes a whole swath of people who happen to not be theists under one umbrella, and obscures crucial distinctions that actually motivate the very reason why we want these words. Anyway, that was a lot to say.
That's the discussion that I was having with Nick Suter, and that's what I was hoping to get into with Duke the other night, that what is the sufficiency that differentiates an atheism versus agnosticism in their paradigm? Because we would agree that not having a God belief would be a necessary condition for both of them. But under their usages, there's no sufficiency that would distinguish between the two to break any kind of symmetry between them. They're indistinguishable from each other, which loses nuance, which loses precision, which loses accuracy. Because if we want to know what a person's positions are, that's what these terms are generally understood for. And I think Ozzy hit the nail on the head and correctly. I've done this before. I've gone out. You ask somebody what these terms are, and he's right. People will say that an agnostic is somebody who doesn't have a – they don't know. That usually the feedback I get is they don't know. But what they mean by that is they don't know how to answer the question. It's not a matter of having knowledge. It's a matter of I have doubt either way. I don't know what to answer this question. I don't know how to assign it to be true or false. I abstain from it. I suspend judgment on it. I don't answer the question with a direct question. I have an indirect way of looking at it. But people know that an agnostic just doesn't make a decision on it. They think that an atheist does. They think that a theist does. And so when you're
can
saying...
Can I say a word about logical non-cognitivism?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were done. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine. I just want to emphasize your point on that. That when we're using like the Duke's and Chris's way of usage here, that it would lose that granularity, and because there's no distinction between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I actually like to jump in on that if you don't mind.
If you ask
a self-defining atheist,
Oh no, go ahead. Ozzy, want to go next? Watch when we get back to him. Go ahead, Tom.
So if you ask a self-defined atheist, how do they define atheism? They're usually going to go with the Duke's definition. So if you use your adopted definition, distinction between atheism is the belief that God does not exist and agnosticism is the lack of belief, you will probably get it wrong if you talk to the self-defining atheists about assuming what their position is. Because if you ask like popular atheists, like Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins, and all of the people who follow them, which is a large proportion of the atheist community, probably the majority, if you ask them what atheist means, they're going to say there's insufficient evidence, or like Sam Harris's definition, I'm not convinced by the evidence. And so if you adopt
this particular definition that they have, but why do I, why me? But right, I'm not going to understand what their stipulative definition is. I have to have something that I can have as a standard I can go look at. So if I ask Ozzy, hey Ozzy, you're an atheist, I know what he means by that. Because he's not going to be using it in that way. If he says he's an atheist, I have an understanding of that because I know the terminology he uses. If he has a different definition, if Ozzy says, I know I'm going to use atheist to mean I don't have enough evidence to, I don't have a position either way, he would have to tell me that because I would have no way of knowing that's how he uses it. Because what you're doing is you're saying these people have their own stipulative ways of defining these things, and I'm expected to know that by asking them a question about their ontology, and they say they're atheists, and I'm going to go, okay, well, you believe there's no gods. Well, they can later say, well, no, that's not what I mean by that. Okay. But I have no expectation in the world to think that they are going to be using it in some way that I have no idea how they're using it. I have to have some kind of measure. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. In fact, that's the major point of the most interesting debate is which is the best usage. And I think the best usage is the one that accurately describes what most people who identify as that word as their position. That's the best usage.
Now, how do you distinguish between that and
that would mean that men's rights activists and feminists both have the same definition and that they are the same movement. And that's ridiculous. So I think that it's a mistake to defer to people who wear a label as being authorities on the label, right? Words are public. Nobody owns them. And nobody who wears a label owns the label. People like to think that, but that is, I think, a piece of politically correct identitarian claptrap. It's just not true. Christians don't get to say that Mormons aren't Christian. That is, you know, Protestants, for instance, don't get to say that Mormons aren't Christians. They'd like to say that Mormons aren't Christians. They'd like to say that Jehovah's Witnesses aren't Christians. They'd like to say that Catholics aren't Christians. Right? Nobody owns these words. These words sort of have to get hashed out. And in-house, they can say what we mean by a Christian is anyone who believes, you know, the Apostles' Creed or the Nicene Creed or something like that. That's fine. They can do that if they want, but they don't get to legislate for anybody else that theirs is the better usage. And with respect to the idea that going with what this particular group would want to call themselves and how they would want to define the terms, I don't see how it could be better. I think that the tendency is to assume that as long as people agree on what the words mean, everything is fine. But what if the definition that you're using is one that obscures what your position is and just shoves a whole swath of people, everyone who isn't a theist, under one big umbrella, right? That isn't lending clarity or specificity at all. The dialogue isn't facilitated. It isn't made clear. That's actually deferring to a group of people who are using an umbrella term. There's already an umbrella term. That term's been around since the 1850s. The term is non-theism. And whenever I've presented this to my fellow atheists, I say, well, why don't you just, say you're a non-theist. And if someone asks, what the hell do you mean by that? Then you can specify the kind of non-theist you are, right? Why don't you do that? And they go, well, non-theist is meaningless. That's right. It's an empty term. No one uses it because no one gives a damn what you're not. If I walked into a room and someone said, what's your position, Ozzy? And I said, I'm a non-agnostic. It means you think you're certain there's a God, you're certain there's no God, like you're a theological non-cognitivist. Like, what's your position, right? So the problem with equating atheism with a lack of belief is that it's indistinguishable from non-theism. And that is not a better position from the standpoint of utility in discourse. It seems to me that you're evacuating all of the precision out of the definition. You're going for the maximally imprecise definition.
Right, exactly. And I believe that that's actually what makes it better. Because if we look at things like the Bible is not precise. The Bible is logically contradictory. The Bible is complete nonsense in many cases, but it's the most popular book in all of humanity. If we look at the most popular movies, there's lots of logical plot holes, but they're the most popular movies because they have explosions. The reason what makes these terms more popular, even though they're less precise, is because of that ambiguity. It helps people to identify with the term easier than having super precise definitions. When you get to these super precise things like logical philosophy, people start to turn away from them because they are too precise. They're too hard to really get a grasp on. And so the ambiguity there actually makes it more usable for more people.
I disagree that it's more usable. I mean, you can go out onto the street and ask total strangers, people who are unschooled in the great debate, and they will tell you that a theist is someone who believes in a God, an atheist is someone who thinks there's no God, an agnostic is someone who's sort of undecided or can't make up their mind or thinks that the answer is unknowable, right? Which lines up with Vincider agnosticism and Huxleyan agnosticism. Those distinctions that people quite naturally make, right, when you just ask them in ordinary conversations, line up perfectly. With the philosophical jargon. And it's not a coincidence because the philosophical jargon has been around for so long that people have sort of drunk it in and have imbibed it. It is movement atheism that is recommending a newfangled definition. And that's okay, they can do that. They can agitate and maybe they will win the day politically. But I think that will be a sad day if they win that, because I think we will have lost some rigor and specificity and precision in our discourse. And then we'll have to sort of, ask a person, what's your position? And you'll say, well, I'm an atheist. And you say, well, okay, but what's your position? And then you'll have to go into more detail needlessly. And when you could just say, I'm an atheist, which means I think there's no God, or I'm an agnostic, meaning it's undefined, or I'm a theological non-cognitive.
Can I say something? Cognitive.
Yeah. Why about me?
All right. So, Ozzy, I noticed your position on feminism and men's rights activists, and I have counter arguments to all of that, but of course there's not going to be time to go through that. And I noticed, the issue of racism came up and you guys were joking about it. And of course I don't have time to go into all of that, but what I would like to do is mention that it is possible for a person's thought process to be internally consistent. And when you're looking at it from the outside and you're only getting bits and pieces of it, from a short conversation, you might think that their position is inconsistent. But if you actually sit with them and walk it through, it could turn out that it is consistent, internally consistent. All right. And I've noticed Steve has claimed that, like my position or Duke's position lacks granularity, but that's not necessarily true, because if once you bring up the non-cognitivist position, you could ask me and we could work it out and I could come up with a new word. I can make up a word to describe that position and say that that's, you know, I can point out that there is no contradiction there. And so there, you can maintain granularity. It's like you've never considered the possibility. And that's one of the things that was frustrating me when you're with your conversation with Duke. And you've also claimed, I've noticed that Steve likes often switches between a discussion about academic philosophy and he'll switch over to science. Like he'll try to make his case about, you know, why these philosophical positions. And as an example, he'll say, oh, I don't go up to a biologist. If I'm going to go up and debate a biologist, I'm going to, you know, but it's different because I draw a distinction between academic philosophy and science, because science uses evidence to back up its claims. Whereas academic philosophy, I believe, is not in the same way making progress like science is, okay? And so I see there's a clear distinction there. If I were to see an academic philosopher, I would debate them on the usefulness of the subject, and I wouldn't need to quote papers from these ancient philosophers to make my point. I could make my point in the moment, okay? I don't need to go and read the books. We sit down together, and I tend to be able to pick up on whatever language or terminology you're using. If you can explain it to me in normal English, I can tend to pick up on it, okay, if you give me that time, okay? But yeah, if you come up to me and you produce a term that's in the SEP, I'm not necessarily going to know it, but you can explain it to me. And then once you've explained it to me, I can tell you that that's an illogical position to hold. It's illogical to even have come up with a name for that position. It's almost as if some of these positions are not held by real people. They're only hypothetical people, you know, and that's one of my principles of when I'm debating people. I have a whole list of debate rules that I like to follow. I would say that you're not allowed to basically not allowed to debate against hypothetical people. You have to be able to point to real people who hold these positions. Otherwise, the debate is going to tend to go in circles.
Chris, I am example. Non-cognitivist.
Non-cognitivist.
Hang on. I used to kind of tend to that. I moved away, but I am an agnostic. Okay. That is my position. Now, let me ask Tom a real quick question. I'm not trying to bypass you. I there's a lot of things to unpack what you just said. I want to leave it to Ozzy because I can't really understand what you said very well. But Tom, if you're taking Chris's approach there, would you recommend that philosophy in the literature should be changed to the and you agree that it's lack specificity. You're agreeing that what you're advocating for is less nuance. What you're agreeing for is less granularity. Would you want the academic literature to reflect that? And so when you see the word atheist in a paper, unless a person specifically said, I'm using atheism as in the positive case, they have to explain this word in your, to be assumed that the word means to just have not a belief. Do you think that it should be changed in the academia? Or are you just using,
no,
just
I
saying
think
that amongst us?
No, I think they're two separate areas, and they are totally fine to have two different definitions in the two different contexts of the philosophical definition, the colloquial definition. I think the popular definition of atheism, the Dave Silverman, Sam Harris, Matt Dillahunty definition, is better colloquially, whereas I think the philosophical definition is better philosophically. I think they have their own better usages.
Okay, so if the better usages is Sam Harris is that atheism is, you know, doesn't have the evidence to support is like that. How do you now differentiate that between evidential agnosticism or just agnosticism?
I don't.
What is the,
that's not why
the difference? Okay, so they mean
there
the exact same thing. So agnostic and atheist in your position are the exact same position.
Not my, in the colloquial position.
In the colloquial, well, so, in Sam Harris's position.
Right, because I have a different definition entirely. So,
Steve, have you seen genetic modified video on this topic?
Yeah, I love him, but one sec. I know your definition, Tom. Your definition is that atheism is the position that there's not enough substantive evidence out there to think that God exists, basically. Is that your position?
Not exactly. I take a stronger definition. I say there is no evidence to indicate the existence of God, and I adopt the burden of proof to try and demonstrate that. And so I do that for the purpose of debate. So it's
I think that's begging the question of the word that you're just automatically saying there is no evidence, therefore atheism is you know, the default position. There is no evidence. I think that's kind of begs the question there. But
well,
anyway,
it's a burden of proof, but yeah, it's a different conversation.
Okay. I get what you're saying. Tom's I just want to make sure on record that. Go ahead.
Yeah, Tom's position, if I understand, is that that it's not rational to be a theist. He doesn't have to hold a position on the ontology and say that there isn't a God. He can just say it's rational to believe
I
God.
I'm afraid that way.
The difficulty there is the agnostic will say the same thing. The agnostic is on the fence precisely because the agnostic doesn't think it's rational to believe in God, but the agnostic also doesn't believe that it's rational to think that there isn't a God. And then there is the rub. You know, I think
for myself,
Tom,
but not for other people. I want to make clear, I don't think as an agnostic that I have to hold the position that you it's not rational for an atheist to think there's no gods. It's just for myself. Yeah, I want to make that very clear. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think when you think that when you say that something isn't rational, I don't think you just mean for yourself. I think you mean that you know, for an ideally rational person, right?
Yeah, but don't the thing think? Is I mean, I if you're talking about justification, I don't have the justification to say God exists. Okay, so it would be irrational for me to hold the position God exists.
That I think Tom makes wanted to respond to me.
Go ahead.
Tom, me? I think you want to respond to me.
Oh, yeah. Ozzy, I was thinking about the reason I think the colloquial definition is better in the way that the Dillahunty and Harris and Silverman use it is because people identify it with more. If you ask the people who identify as atheists what they use the word to mean, they use it in this sense because it's emotionally more meaningful to them. And it helps them to feel better in some sense, which is why they adopt it, which is why more atheists go for that definition than the philosophical definition. And so I think it's better colloquially because they identify it with the word more than they do with the philosophical definition. Because if they adopt the philosophical definition, they would probably not, it wouldn't be as emotionally meaningful to them.
Well, I agree it's emotionally meaningful, and I think that there are other actually illicit reasons why they find it appealing. I think that they imagine that if they define a word a certain way, irrespective of what their own position is, if they define their position, that is, if they name their position atheism, and then they define atheism a certain way, then they don't have any burden of justification, because an umbrella term like non-theism or atheism defined as non-theism doesn't have a burden of justification because it's not the name of a position at all. So I think that that is a very strong motivator. That is part of the appeal of this within movement atheism, is that you just can always insist that the theists have to defend their position, even if you think that, as I do, gods are made up. I mean, the difficulty I have with this is that it engenders a very bad habit of mind in a lot of atheists. It deludes them into thinking that the only person in a conversation who has a burden of justification is the other person, when in fact, there's no such thing as the burden of proof. I mean, the burden of proof applies in court because we've structured our court system so that there's only one person with a burden of justification. But in discourse, the people who have a burden of justification are everybody who has a position. And so if your position is that there isn't a God, or that it's irrational to believe that there's a God, or it's undecidable, or that discourse is meaningless, or that there is a God, or you know whatever the position is, you have a burden of justification. But what has happened here is, I think, people have recommended a definition that is this umbrella term. As such, it is the name for a suite of different and conflicting and contradictory positions. And consequently, there isn't a burden of justification for that, because that's not a position. That's an umbrella suitcase term for, you know, half a dozen different positions. And people then delude themselves into thinking, though they do have a position, that they don't actually have a position. Because they've named their position something that is then defined as a non-position. That, I think, is actually a liability. That is the very reason why I recommend to my fellow atheists, let's stop doing this. We're not fooling anybody on the other side. And people who are sort of fence sitters are not inclined to adopt the label atheism. In fact, they resent it. The agnostics resent it mightily. Chris, you were sort of suspicious of the term theological non-cognitivism. There are plenty of theological non-cognitivists out there. They're admittedly a minority, and I think it's a minority because it's actually kind of a hard position to defend. But I've known a number of theological non-cognitivists in my life. There was one who was very active in the community years ago, a fellow by the name of Gadfly. I don't know if anybody remembers him, but he was around for a long time. He made videos, participated very actively and aggressively in Hangouts. And he was a theological non-cognitivist, and convinced more than one person of his position. So it's a real position. It's the view, it's simply the view, not that the God question isn't answerable, but that the God concept is incoherent. And consequently, the proposition God exists can't be true, nor can it be false. It's like asking, what's the difference between a duck? That sounds like a question, but it's not a meaningful question. It's just a string of words that sounds like a question. And similarly, God exists is a string of words that isn't a proposition that could be true or false. So that's the theological non-cognitivist position. And the person who holds that position thinks atheism is stupid. They think that I'm out to lunch, that I have drunk the Kool-Aid every bit as much as a theist, because I, as a, someone who thinks God doesn't exist, have to at least posit that the proposition is meaningful. So a theological non-cognitivist holds me and agnostics and theists in complete contempt. They see us as deluded and confused, bewitched by language. So they don't want to be called atheists because their position is inconsistent with atheism. It's as inconsistent with atheism as it is with theism and agnosticism. And that's why it's a mistake to subsume them under the same heading.
Okay, so I would like to say that, you know, I still believe it's possible for a person to have a granular position that you have not yet sussed out. You have not yet had the long, complicated debate about what kinds of words they would ascribe to these other positions, okay? So just because, for example, Ozzy, you're talking about, you know, using umbrella terms to subsume all these contradictory positions together, well, that... You can just use a subterm to describe these subgroups this way and this subgroup a different way. You can invent a new word to describe this subgroup, and you could just go on and on. So it's always there's always a way to do that.
I agree. You can always do that, right? I mean, you know, if a discourse has a vocabulary that names the various positions, and you don't want to bother learning that vocabulary, you can try to impose upon the person that knows that vocabulary to translate what they're saying into another language, or you can have your own idiomatic and idiosyncratic usage and try to get everybody to sort of talk the way you talk, or you can do what Tom is recommending and saying, listen, well, how about we just sort of go with common usage here, and if we're in a specific discourse, we use the specific jargon as they use it. I think we have to sort of accommodate ourselves to how the words actually are employed. And you try to meet people where they are, but I think it's ridiculous to sort of expect the whole world to accommodate itself to your granular position if you're refusing to adopt the vocabulary. Now, if there's something wrong with the vocabulary, if there was something inadequate with the standard jargon, the typology here of positions, then I think you would have a good case to make. But I don't think that anyone is sort of coming up with any new positions that would cause us to want to rethink the vocabulary. Because you might have a new position, and then we just coin a new term for it.
Well, can I give an example? Let me give an example from the date real quick, because I did that. Real quick, I did that yesterday. I just want to do a rejoinder real quick, because it's pertinent. He wanted to use words. I mean, I used words like believe, accept, affirm. Duke didn't want to use any of those things. It seemed he didn't know what the meanings were. I even told him, create your own word, make a word up for me for the concept of does not accept the proposition or thinks the proposition is true. Whatever you want to use for that word, I can make use of that. And I think that's fine to do that. But you have to understand the concepts first. So I agree with Ozzy. Whatever you want to label these things, you can come up with a whole different paradigm of words. Concepts are still going to be the same. If you say that I believe P is false, or I quirkle P is false, if you mean quirkle to think the position is false, it's just a signifier there. The actual content to me is exactly the same thing.
Exactly. And that's why I was surprised.
Hold on 1 second. I just wanted to comment here, and then you can go.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that I'm not saying that when I say the better usage of the word, I don't mean that it should be applied universally to everyone, whether they like it or not. I think that the best usage is the one that's the most emotionally engaging to people, and which is why they identify with the term. I think that's what makes it the best. And the definition that does that is the colloquial definition of atheism. I don't think we should apply it in philosophy. I still think everyone should get to define it however they want. But I still think the best usage is the one that's the most emotionally engaging.
I think Chris? Because it's so emotionally engaging, can also be as much of a turn off for people who are religious because of the connotations that they imbue the opposition with.
I was just going to say that because we can use different words to mean different things, and we can come up with our own definitions and all of this. That's, I mean, since you, Steve, you seem to understand this, that's why I was surprised that you weren't able to reach a better understanding with the Duke in exactly that way. Like, I noticed that you were having trouble understanding why he was confused about believe versus affirm. And I think I would understand why those are different, all right?
What's the distinction between the two?
Well, I'm not going to say that I know what his distinction was going to be, but from my position, when I'm debating these kinds of topics, I like to say claim. I like to say that people claim to believe in a certain thing, you know? And when you started saying affirm, it sounded more like to expressly claim to hold the belief, as opposed to internally.
I'm not going to argue against somebody who claims. If you say that it means that they claim something, right? When somebody says that I believe something, they're making a claim, right? It's kind of self-evident I'm not going to say they're not making a claim. I'm not going to argue if they're making a claim or not that much. I think that that's kind of evident that they are. However, he was trying to say that theists are not making a claim. He actually said theism doesn't make a claim, which was really mind-boggling. Wait,
you just switched right there. You just switched right there from theist to theism. Theism is a set of beliefs.
A theist is a person who holds theism. There's an ist-ism relationship.
Yeah, but that's why he was confused.
I felt that you were switching,
and I think you were switching.
A theist is somebody who affirms theism. There's a symmetry there. An ist-ism relationship. Okay, so let me ask you this. If I say I believe P is true or I affirm P was true, you're saying there's a distinction there to be made. What is the sufficient distinction between them that you're advocating exists where those hold to be two different things?
Mind if I answer that?
Is that?
I think that Duke interpreted it to mean that I affirm means I know it exists, as opposed to I believe, which is just I believe it exists. I think that's what he thought.
But that's what he may have thought it is. But Chris is advocating that those are two different things. Belief and affirm are two different things. So what is the distinction between the two?
All I'm saying is that it's possible for a person to hold different definitions of those words than you do, and to believe that. You know, when people are talking about what they believe, that's an internal, it's not necessarily a scientifically provable thing, okay? To believe something is not a scientifically provable thing, in my view. To affirm something sounds more like something that you would be able to scientifically prove if you had a camera and a microphone in their presence. That's the distinction I could see.
Chris, I think what was going on comes in. Yeah, Chris, if I can help out here, I think what was going on with the Duke was he was hearing affirm and he was sort of confusing it connotationally with the word confirm, right? So I think I agree with Tom here as well that in the Duke's mind, the word affirm meant something much stronger than believe, right? That it was corroborative.
I could see that. I think that may have been the case, right? But.
But Steve did try to say, let's go with believe or coin a word or something. He did try to sort of offer him a face-saving way out on that one.
Yeah, right. And then he chose believe. Let's stick with believe. And so that's fine. There was another thing I wanted to point out in the debate that with Steve. I noticed that Steve juxtaposed. He believes that, you know, the academic philosophy, the literature is a body of facts and that's separate from ideology or politics.
No, I do not. Okay. I do not affirm that. I reject that, what you just said. The literature is the
information. I may have misstated.
Yeah. Just because something's in the literature doesn't make it a fact. It's a fact that it's in the literature, but that's different from saying that what's in the literature is a fact. Those are two different statements.
You were trying to... you were trying to claim that he was expressing an opinion when he said that the field is wrong. You were saying that he was just merely expressing an opinion, and you wanted the facts, and you wanted the research, you wanted the proof behind, you know, his claims. And I'm
I think you misunderstand. There's a fact of the matter to be had. That is what is in the literature. If I say SCP says this, it is a fact. You can go look at SCP and see if that's in there. That is a material fact. I couldn't even get him to even get that far.
Yes, he did.
He wavered on it. He really, to me, he oscillated between back and forth, because he even said, I didn't even read the literature. He didn't read anything. So at that point, he's arguing something that he doesn't even know what's in there. Right?
You're misunderstanding his position. That's why you think, because I can explain it this way. Okay, so it's similar to my position. I believe if I were going to be bold, I would say that the literature is the philosophers, the academic philosophers, a specific group of people have illogical positions. Okay, I believe that they have. I would claim that they have illogical positions. Okay. And I don't need to go and read all of their literature to find out that it's illogical and it's just going around in circles like they've been doing for hundreds of years. I don't have to read all the details of it. I can explain, you know, extemporaneously exactly why I think any individual academic philosophical position is illogical. So I think that's what he was doing. He's trying to get you to understand that it's illogical for a person to hold the view that that these definitions are the better definitions. And it was also interesting to see that you were holding back.
I'm really confused here. How are you using these terms logic? Because I'm not seeing what you're seeing. Clearly.
I'm using them in different ways because I know that you like.
Let me clarify. The fact that you're using it in a different way is confusing to everybody here. Because I have to now stop and say, you're using it atypically from how any of us would use these terms, and you have a stipulative way of using them, which I think bogs down the conversation. Tom's arguing we should all use these colloquial terms and stipulative terms. This is an example why I think that we shouldn't, because you're saying that something's illogical, which means that it doesn't follow some kind of logical form. You can logically prove it to be not the case.
That's formal logic.
Okay, you're meaning the more you don't think it's rational, right?
Right. That would be your way of putting it.
Okay. Again, let me make it, because you're a science guy. I can say that in the literature, evolution is a change of allelic frequency. That's a fact. He's arguing. I didn't know if he was arguing if that's not in the literature, if it was in the literature. I had to suss it out first. But he's saying that that's wrong. That evolution is not a change of allelic frequency. That's how I would do the analogy. So I need to know what standard he's using to say that's wrong. He's saying that how these terms used in the literature are wrong. By what measure are they wrong?
When he's saying wrong, I think you were misunderstanding what he meant by wrong. And I found it strange that you were holding back in the debate from getting into all the distinctions between what kinds of wrong there could be. Like, you know that there are different kinds of ethical positions that a person could have, and you didn't go into detail about exactly which wrong he was talking about.
I will give you this. I did hold back. I could have gone into ethical virtue theory and consequentialism and what he's appealing to, a normative ethical theory. I wasn't going to go that deep because he didn't even have a superficial understanding of the topic. So I wasn't going to go that
far. And that's why you misunderstood each other.
No, because he wouldn't have known what any of those terms I just said are. When you say something is wrong, if I say 1 + 1 = 2 and you say it's wrong, you need to explain to me why that's wrong. He couldn't explain to me why the literature is wrong. He never read the literature even to begin with. He says, I don't know philosophy. I haven't read the literature, but it's wrong. Who does that? Creationists do that with evolution. I haven't read the evolutionary books, but it's wrong.
Okay. If I say that the academic philosophers are doing illogical, irrational things, if they're believing irrational beliefs, you know, I could also say that they're just wrong on that. They're wrong.
If you think it's wrong, right? Write a paper and they'll be going, they'll take your paper and evaluate it. Because
you misunderstood.
Everybody keeps thinking I'm misunderstanding. I think you're a little, wait, no offense, but really? I think you're being a little disingenuous. I do understand.
There's a different
meaning. I really do.
There's a different meaning of
misunderstanding, a different meaning of logic, and a different meaning of rational. Every term let me explain. This leads to confusion. Okay. Same with the joke.
No, it's not that confusing. So if I'm using my definitions my way, right, and we're having a conversation, you know, and you understand my definitions, I understand yours, and then I say that this third person's positions are wrong, then that doesn't mean that they are holding morally, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're holding morally bad positions or that there's something morally bad about what they're doing. It could just mean that their position is in contradiction with my position. And in that sense, they are wrong, okay? And so I think that you were assuming, it seemed to me that you were assuming morality in his position when there could
not
have
been. No, I wasn't. I was actually taking it to be factually incorrect. I was actually taking when he said wrong. No, I was taking when he said wrong to be factually incorrect, not a moral judgment, although it could be construed either way.
Then but, how could you explain his
confusion? I was asking him.
When you ask him,
but this is the clarification I was asking him. What do you mean by wrong?
Yeah,
you didn't.
He did ask him. What? No, he did. He asked him on more than one occasion. In what way is it wrong? Why do you think they're wrong? And
but what I'm saying is that if he was not understanding, if he was rejecting your method by going to the literature and pointing out the citing sources, clearly that's not what he meant by wrong. Why didn't you switch to the other definition? Because you already know it exists.
I'm not KA, let's get the let's get your take. You wanted to come in and say something.
Yeah, to chime in real quick.
No, we can't hear you.
Oh, you're really low.
You're really low.
I can barely hear you. Can you turn your mic up?
I'm trying to.
Dave, can you kick his gain up? Hold on one second.
Yeah, you're so low to be almost not even audible.
That is the stuff I just did.
Ooh. Can you turn it up even anymore? Because it's really, really low.
Do you have your preamp on? Or your phantom power supply or something? Is that an XLR mic? Or because it's not picking up.
I'll tell you what. We're going to have to do the same thing that we did with Luke real quick. Okay.
Those settings are super really placed.
Real quick, go to settings up on Chrome. Click advanced settings. And after you click advanced settings, in that first section that says, oh, sorry. Thank you for calling Non-Sec Technical Support. This is Kyle. How may I help you? Oh, you're having an issue with your microphone. All right. So you're going to click advanced settings. You're going to click in that first box under privacy and security. In the next to the last option will say content settings. Please click content settings. You will see an option for your microphone. Make sure that you have the correct microphone selected. If not, please select it and then hit refresh on your browser. That will then bring you back in and we should be able to hear you.
You're fired. You forgot to ask him if he rebooted and if he has it turned on.
Just unplug it.
Stick it in again.
Do you see those settings?
Yeah, Kyle, why don't you do Apple support, man? That'd be, there you go.
No,
Mr.
No.
Colin.
I'll get too pissed off easy.
Is the reason he sounds so low because it's picking up a different mic that's farther away and he can just switch mics?
Yeah.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what happens is for some reason vMix is going to go with a default microphone, like if it's built in or something like that. And if you have an external plugged in, you have to go in and physically choose that. So right. Once you do that, refresh or close out and come back in, and then we'll be able to hear you.
Come out and come back in again.
Okay. There we go. Mac genius. No, thank you. I would lose my patience. Could do a genius bar. Now talk. Can you hear me?
Oh, no.
No. Okay, here's our last option. If you look up in your search bar, you will see a camera icon. Do you see the camera icon? It's near the star where you bookmark pages. Click the camera icon in the address bar, and then that will say manage. You don't have it. Are you using Chrome? And you don't see a camera icon right beside the star. If you're looking at your address bar in the far right side, there's a star, and then there should be a little camera icon. Okay, if you click that, it will then give you the option to click manage. You can click manage and then choose the right microphone. I can't hear him. I don't know if this is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, someone who has something to say, go ahead. I'll try to talk him through it on the side here.
Yeah, Steve, I've only got an introduction to philosophy book here, and I'm not even that far into it. The only atheist literature I've read is Bertrand Russell's. And when you're reading these atheist literatures, are they showing the flaws in logic of theist thinking, or are they making positive proofs of the position that there are no gods?
I've read things that argue both. I mean, we can go through various atheist arguments. We do it all the time. I mean, I was talking about the argument from contingency last night. We went into the specific details about that. When you're reading a philosophy book, the philosophy book is more talking about the overall understanding of these things, right? It's explaining the philosophy on it. I mean, it's not going into detail about arguing whether gods exist or not. That's a different thing altogether. I'm not really interested if God exists or not. I'm more interested in the conversation and the arguments to be had. And those are set forth by different types of literature. Now, I don't really particularly read a lot of that type of literature that's arguing one way or another. I don't argue, I went to an AMP convention recently, which was put on by Reasons to Believe, which was arguing for the existence of God. And, it's funny, Ozzy mentioned this in-house, because when I was listening to these things, Dr. Ken Samples, he said something that I took umbrage with, and I was like, that's not really how it is in philosophy. And I leaned over to Dr. Kenny Rhodes, and I said, why would he say that? That doesn't make sense to me. And he said, he's looking at it from the Christian perspective. And you're right. He wouldn't have said that if this was a group of atheists, but he's talking to a group of theists, so he's doing in-house way of explaining things. And that was fine after that. It made sense, right? But I don't read the books that are arguing one way or another whether God exists or not. I mean, if I want to have that discussion, that's fine. But it's really not that much of an interest to me. I just like breaking down the arguments itself. But if I could sit there and listen to Ozzy argue that gods don't exist, I'm happy to do so. And then we'll evaluate his arguments.
Your point seemed to be that the reasoning behind why you use the term atheist as you do is because it fits with the conventions of philosophy. And as you pointed out, it establishes a binary dichotomy with theism, which has a sort of aesthetic symmetry about it, which I appreciate, but I don't think that the I think anti fits as a better
I don't agree with that. But Ozzy, you wanted to get in here real quick?
Well, I mean, historically, if someone had come up with the word anti-theist before they came up with the word atheist, then anti-theist would be the word that we use to refer to people who think that there's no gods. Language is sort of a product of contingent accidents of how people started speaking and which words come into usage and when they come into usage is sort of not up to us, and we can't sort of, we just can't go back and revise things that way.
As a computer scientist,
there's no reason why. Well, I mean, there's no reason why. We can certainly clarify the way we speak, but what I mean is that the fact is that the word atheist came into usage before the word anti-theist came into usage, and the concept of someone who thinks there isn't a god, it got a label, and that label was atheist, and it's been in use in modern languages for a couple of centuries now, well before the word anti-theist ever came along. And that's just the way it is. They're two different concepts, and I want to speak to Luke's question about what sort of what you might find in a philosophy of religion textbook. If you just take a course in philosophy of religion and look at a kind of standardized textbook, a text by like Lewis E. Podgman or something like that. It's got a famous college university textbook on an introductory text on the philosophy of religion. It's been in through many, many editions. And it's an anthology of famous papers and articles and excerpts from chapters of books and stuff like that on these subjects. And there are arguments for theism, there are arguments for agnosticism, there are arguments for atheism. And that's just an anthology that's intended for undergraduates. I mean, within the philosophical literature, there's all kinds of people who are arguing for God. Most analytic philosophers nowadays, I'd say, are either atheists or agnostics, probably leaning heavily towards the atheist persuasion. But there are people who argue for God, and they offer what they think are proofs of God or good reasons to think that probably there's a God. And there are people who argue for agnosticism, and people who argue for theological non-cognitivism, and people who argue for atheism. The literature is replete, but there tends to be a consistency in what they mean by the word atheism, which is a particular position, the positive position, that there aren't any gods.
Yeah, so specifically with regard to that, that to me seems like either you have to A, pick up a definition of God, and B, a framework with which to evaluate that God in. And that is not a universally applicable position to have. So, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you could be an atheist with respect to one God. For instance, there's a lot of people out there who say, well, listen, when it comes to the Abrahamic faiths, you know, the gods based on the Bible, inspired by the Old Testament, right? Judaism, Islam, Christianity, they'll say, you know, those gods, I think those gods don't exist. Those are clearly made up. They're as made up as you know, the Olympian gods of the ancient Greeks, right? They just write them off as false, right? But they might say, well, you know, deism, that's a, you know, or the god of the philosophers, that's a much more rarefied god, a god that doesn't intervene in the physical world, so we wouldn't expect to find evidence. There's no miracles in such a world, right? So if we live in a world created by a deity in the deistic sense, then they might be agnostic about that, right? So you can be, you know, atheistic with respect to some conceptions of a god and agnostic with respect to others. I mean, a theist is an atheist with respect to some religions and gods, and a believer with respect to the god of their own religion, right? So you don't have to be a global atheist and believe that all gods don't exist. I'm someone who thinks none of those gods exist. They're all made up. And I have reasons why I think they're all made up. I think there's better reasons for thinking that all of them are made up than that any one of them is likely to be true. I don't think there's any good reason to think that any one of them is likely to be true. And so I don't have one knockdown argument against every species of theism, because they are subject to different objections. So, you know, the objections that I would raise against deism are very different than the kinds of objections that I would raise against a religion like Christianity. Right? I have different arguments depending on the type of God in question. So I'm an atheist. Yeah. I'm a global atheist, but you don't have to be a global atheist, right? You could be.
Yeah, you could be like a local anti-atheist, right? I'm moving toward being a local atheist toward like the Catholic Church anymore for all the things going on. I'm over it. I'm sick of it. So I think you could be a local atheist, a local agnostic, a local anti-theist. I think that's why we have these nuances. I mean, for that very reason, this is a good argument why I reject, you know, Tom's and Chris's versions of these things, because you lose all that and you don't have the ability to do any of that if you just make it one big tent.
Can I raise one other point about the use of the word atheism in philosophy? Someone in the live chat wrote, I think somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but maybe it was in sincerity, something about check your philosophical privilege. And I don't think that one needs to argue and recommend the conventional usage of atheism as the positive view that there aren't any gods on the basis of being wedded to philosophy. As I've said, people out there already in their masses, in their millions, think that atheism is the view that there's no gods. And they've never set foot in a philosophy classroom. That is a common usage. It's already out there. And it's precisely because it's so widespread out there that organizations like American Atheists are agitating to revise it. I'm sorry, say that again?
I would argue that it's political gerrymandering. They that it would be in their best political interest to define atheism in such a way that it can't meet its burden of proof. So when you hold a positive claim about the absence of any given phenomenon, the only way to even assert that would be committing a black swan fallacy.
Well, who's doing the gerrymandering? I'm not sure I was following what you were saying there.
Yes, the theists want to gerrymander the definition of atheism such that it is an impossible position to...
That's true. That's absolutely true. Yeah, that's absolutely true. I hear that all the time. I hear theists all the time insist that in order to be an atheist, you have to be able to prove that there's no God. You don't have to have good reasons for thinking there's no God. You have to prove it. That is to say, you have to establish, you have to demonstrate through some kind of something equivalent to a geometric proof, the absolute impossibility of any and all gods. Well, yeah, that's a pretty high standard that you'd have to meet. But you don't have to meet that standard if that's what you think is the case. But I'm an atheist, and I don't think that's the case. I don't think that any and all gods are impossibilities. They're not all completely contradictory or self-contradictory. Some conceptions of God, you know, the omni-god, the God with the three omni attributes, I think that there's no way to cash out those attributes in any sense that anyone wants to affirm that that aren't incoherent. So I think that God is logically impossible. Theistic God, I don't think, is logically self-contradictory. I can't demonstrate that that God is real, but I have reasons for why I think that that God is a fiction. And I think that the reasons for thinking that God is a fiction are better for any of the arguments for thinking that that God is real. And that's why I'm an atheist with respect to that God too, and other conceptions of God. So yes, there's gerrymandering. There are people that would try to define atheism so narrowly that it has an impossible burden, namely, you're only an atheist, some people would say, some theists would say, if you can prove that there's no God. But that's obviously unfair. But it's equally unfair when I hear atheists say, you can only be a theist, you should only be a theist if you can prove that there's a God. Well, what if there's just all kinds of wonderful evidence that there's a God? And what if a person thinks that there's wonderful evidence that there's a God? Then they have, by their lights, good reasons for thinking that there's a God. If theism doesn't mean the belief that you can prove there's a God, it's just the belief that there's a God. Atheism isn't the belief that you can prove that there's no God, it's the belief that there isn't a God, right? And so absolute certainty and proof and all of that have no part in this. They're not, they should not be part of the definitions. And so my view is this: if a theist tries to saddle me with a burden of justification for a position that I don't hold, I remind them, that's not the position that I hold. I just think there, as a matter of fact, there aren't any gods. I don't think that all gods are impossibilities. So I'm not going to defend that. I don't have that burden that you're trying to saddle on me, right? I don't like it when I see atheists do it to theists, and I don't like it when people do it to certain flavors of agnostics, like fence sitters, for instance, right? Fence sitter agnostics are people who are simply undecided or inconclusive. They find the evidence both ways to be completely inconclusive. They don't think that either possibility is ruled out, but neither one is ruled in. They're just on the fence. Now, I don't like it when I hear theists and atheists suggest that a fence sitter agnostic has to defend the position of the Huxleyan agnostic. Huxleyan agnostic's position is the position that the question is unanswerable by anyone ever. It's not just a matter of, if I don't have the good reasons, or we haven't discovered some fact yet, or no one has generated a convincing argument. It's that no such argument could be forthcoming. That God, as implied by the concept, is undecidable. Okay. Now, a fence sitter, that's not their position. They're not. A fence sitter is just says, I can't decide. I can't make up my mind. They're not saying no one has any business ever making up their mind because, you know, God is an unknowable thing. That's a specific kind of agnostic. So there's a lot of this. But when people try to saddle you with a burden of justification that you don't hold, the proper reaction is to say, I don't have that burden of justification because that's not a position that I hold. That's a straw man. What you should not do is say, I don't have a burden of justification at all. You're trying to saddle me with a burden of justification I don't hold. So I'm just going to deny that I have any burden of justification at all. I'm going to pretend that my position is indistinguishable from babies, rocks, and houseplants. That, I think, is a terrible mistake. It makes atheists look weak. It looks like we're playing hide the ball. It's the kind of burden-shifting move that we detest when we hear it coming out of the mouths of theists, and it shouldn't be coming out of our mouths.
All right. So if I were to state my question as a positive claim. I'm going to phrase it like this, and I'd be curious between Ozzy and Steve if they conceptualize it more as an agnosticism or an atheist position. All right. My position is one cannot rationally conclude there is a God without using an epistemological framework that permits contradicting ideas, and furthermore, the pervasive motivation.
Wait, sorry. I'm sorry, Luke. I'm not trying to cut you off. I missed the beginning of that. Could you say it again? There was some noise over here, and I just missed the beginning, and I don't want to misdescribe your position.
All right. One cannot rationally conclude there is a God without using an epistemological framework that permits contradicting ideas, and furthermore, the pervasive motivation to suspect God and other superstitions is rooted in our flawed psychology and has no bearing in reality.
I wouldn't know if you're an atheist or theist, or assuming atheist or agnostic. All I know is that you say theist is not possible, so you're not theist. That's all I know from that.
Yeah, I don't know if you're a theological non-cognitivist, an agnostic, or an atheist. Here's a simple question.
Atheist, anything.
With respect to the proposition God exists, do you think it's true or false? Or do you think it's undecidable? Or do you think the question's meaningless? Just tell me.
I think it is defined in such a way that makes it a useless proposition.
Useless as in meaningless, or we just could never know the answer?
Unfalsifiable.
Unfalsifiable? That would make you a Huxleyan style agnostic.
I would think it'd make him almost an atheist in some ways.
You could be a Huxley.
True. But, Huxley and agnostic. Okay. But the problem there is Huxley and agnostic.
They start to blend into one another. Igtheism is a kind of soft theological non-cognitivism.
Yeah, because one's the epistemological proposition, and you're conflating the epistemology with ontology here, Luke. Because he's asking you an ontological question. He's asking you what your position on the ontology is, not your position on the epistemological proposition, which is the knowability of gods. So that proposition really doesn't matter. So when he's asking you, what is your stance on the ontology? Not that if it's knowable or not. Do you think that the proposition of God existing is true or false, or does it? Go ahead.
In order for me to evaluate the ontology of something, I first must need to provide an epistemological framework to evaluate it under, and it seems that any epistemological framework that evaluates the God proposition as true in an ontological sense permits contradicting ideas within it. So
if they're all contradictory, if every conception of God is contradictory, then that means there couldn't be a God. It depends on what you mean by that. That's why I said, look, the way to answer the question is, do you think there's a God or not? And do you think the proposition God exists is true? Do you think it's false? Are you on the fence? Is it undecidable? Right. So you just sort of have to ask yourself the question, do I think that there's a God? And you don't even have to ask yourself, do I have good reasons? I know lots of theists who believe that there's a God and don't have a damn good reason at all, except that they drunk in this belief with their mother's milk when they were children, and they believe in a God. That makes them theists even though they don't have good reasons. And similarly, there are lots of atheists out there that don't have a single atheological argument. They don't have a single reason for thinking that there's no God that they can articulate. And those people, I would submit, are just irrational atheists, but they're still atheists. You don't have to have a reason to be an atheist, qualify as an atheist. You just have to think that there isn't a God. So just ask yourself in your heart of hearts, do you think there's a God or not? Why not? Right.
So when it comes to ontology, that's like the study of existence, right? What exists and what doesn't exist, correct?
Yes, being, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. So, you're being asked a question about the existence of something. Does something exist? Is something a part of reality or not?
So for any given ontological claim, the default position is the null hypothesis.
That's absolutely so wrong. That's misinformation that atheists want that puts the narrative out. There's no standing for that whatsoever. And even in statistics, there's no standing for that.
It doesn't even make sense to say that you could have that a default position is the rational position, right? The default position in science is something quite different. And it's applied quite differently. But it doesn't make sense to posit that there's a position that's rational that doesn't have a reason, right? If you just, you know, believe something or fail to believe something without a reason, that doesn't make sense, right? I mean, if someone says to me, hey, Ozzy, do you think the Holocaust is real, that happened? And I said, well, the default position is it didn't happen. It's not right to believe that the Holocaust or anything else didn't happen or isn't real. I have to have a reason why I think the Holocaust didn't happen, if that was my view. I have to have a reason why I think Bigfoot doesn't exist. I have reasons why I think Bigfoot exists, right? But the reason, but saying I was born not believing in Bigfoot is the worst imaginable reason for thinking that there isn't a Bigfoot.
It's a bad argument. Yeah.
It's just a terrible argument.
We got to start wrapping here soon. And by the way, we'll get back to the null hypothesis thing one day. I promise you, because I think that's one of the worst arguments atheists make from philosophical and from a statistical point of view, because if you're going to claim a null hypothesis, you need to tell me about what you're using for p-value. I need to know your significant alpha. I need to know how you use, what makes it a default. There's so many epistemological and statistical problems with saying that. It's just nonsensical to me from the get-go, and I think it's a very, very bad argument. But anyways, MJ popped in real quick. Let's get to him real quick. He's another philosophical dude. So what do you got to add to this real quick? Because we do have to skip to super chats and wrap up.
Yeah, I was just going to chime in with something that Tom said. What was that distinction that you made between granularity and it just being the most popular definition? And then that was the reason for why that particular label was going to be ran with. What was that distinction again, just so I get it right?
I'm not sure what distinction you're talking about, but I said the best definition or the best usage of a word is the one that's the most emotionally engaging.
Emotionally engaging, that's right. And that was to make a distinction between the emotional engagement with the word atheist and the way it's used in the philosophical literature.
Yeah, right? As opposed to precision.
To disengage it. The first thing that popped in my head with regard to that, and I was just going to run it by you and then we could end the show because I was just going to see how you interacted with the idea. You're familiar with the group Antifa, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and just, I won't even get into whether or not the agenda is correct. It'd be beside the point. So they would say that they're against fascism, right?
Yes. Anti-fascist, right. Yes. Anti-fascist.
Right, and that would be a label that would be emotionally, they would be emotionally attached to, right?
I assume so.
Right, otherwise they probably wouldn't have chosen it. Would it be wrong for like the more analytical person to come on the scene and just be like, the way fascism is, defined in political philosophy is such and such and such and such? Do you think they would have a point, or do you think they would have to defer that meaning to Antifa, and then analogously apply that to the atheist debate? That's the only thing that.
No, again, I'm not. I'm not saying that anyone should change their definition. Any one person can define any word however they want. I don't care at all. I'm using the word best usage to describe some kind of bigger perspective. Like in language, as language evolves, why does it evolve and choose one definition over another? And the reason it chooses one over the other is because it's a more popular definition, because it's more emotionally engaging, more people identify with it. And so I think the best usage, the one that's going to win out, the usage wins out, mm-hmm. is the one that's going to be the most emotionally engaged. I'm not saying that we should change to that definition.
So the one that wins out might not necessarily be the most analytical or the most granular, right?
It's usually not.
Oh, man, we live in society.
I understand. That was just a clarification question. I appreciate it, Tom.
All right. I think we need to start wrapping it up. Oh, this was engaging. We got way away from the actual debate, which was fine. There wasn't really much more to talk about it. Duke, we offered a chance to come in. He didn't. Kyle, we can't hear you. Everybody go like this. Everybody go like this. Fast, fast, fast. Sign language. Do this. Come on. Yeah, there you go.
I muted myself. Yeah. I was typing so much. Okay. I muted myself. It wasn't my problem.
Did we get a new mic? Is that fixed? You got a new mic now?
That's fixed.
It's on the way still. Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Anybody have any final thoughts they want to put out there before I start reading super chats and then end with a very motivational speech?
Yeah, I'd like to say something because I noticed.
I had a feeling you would, Chris.
Yeah, I would love to have more time to talk about this kind of stuff with Steve. I've noticed that Steve has a there's a pattern where he continuously misstates my position, mischaracterizes it by claiming that I would be losing granularity, even though I can claim that I can maintain that level of granularity if you were to take the time to go through it with me, all right? Also, I wanted to say that it seems to me that Steve believes that it is morally bad for a person to call someone something that they do not self-identify as. In this case, to call Steve an atheist. He seems to believe that it's morally bad for another person to call him an atheist because he does not self-identify as an atheist. And otherwise, they're free to do whatever they want. And that's a moral position that he could explicitly state, and that would make things clearer. And because in his debate with Duke, it seems that Duke explicitly disagrees with that position, and they never got to the heart of that disagreement. And I also wanted to also throw in that during that debate, Steve claimed, I was trying to express this before, I may have misrepresented your position, Steve, but you claimed, you made a reference to the academic philosophy literature. When he said that they are wrong, when Duke said that they are wrong, you know, you were saying I don't care about your opinion. I'm only interested in, you know, the evidence. And I don't know exactly what your words were, but then you said that you also went on the rant. You made several statements to the effect that you are not motivated by an ideology or by politics. And I think that that's something that can be actually unwound, because there's a lot in that statement that you are the one person who is unbiased in all of this, and that the American atheists are biased, and that, you know, all of these, the Christians are biased, and all of this stuff. So I think there's something there for us to get into. That's all I want to say.
We'll have to bring you back for a one-on-one with Steve. Steve, do you want to respond?
I really don't have anything to respond to that. I mean, I don't know what he's really trying to say. I when you say somebody's wrong, you need to show reasons why they're wrong, not just give.
He's saying that you're smug and incorrect.
Well, we're gonna make smug. Yeah, and everybody's gonna get us. We're gonna get smugs. You're gonna buy a smug. I'm gonna get a smug myself. Smug Steve. Smugs. I love that. We're gonna sell smugs.
Anyone else?
Smitty, you're brilliant. I'm not gonna get over that. That's brilliant. Smugs.
Yeah, I got a quick comment. I'd actually like to talk to. You hear the thoughts of Ozzy and Graham Opie on the origins of atheism and the Greek atheos, and was that originally used to mean both, like, without a God or lacking of belief and disbelief, because it was essentially a crime, but the crime was also convicted of Christians in the Roman Empire. So I'd like to know what they think about the origin of the word atheos, and did it apply to both lack of belief and a rejection eventually, some other date?
Yeah, I could say it briefly. The ancient Greek atheos was used arguably against Plato, by which it meant impiety, namely that he taught falsehoods about the gods. And the Romans later used the word, they were Greek speaking, or they were Romans, but they were Greek speaking, used the word atheos against Christians, because Christians, although they were theists, they believed in a God, and the Romans knew this, they practiced a religion that was newfangled, which in those days was understood as something called superstitio. And the Romans have a lot of respect for ancient religions, so Judaism is okay. But Christianity seemed like a newfangled, new age cult to them, and they had no respect for it, and they didn't like the fact that, unlike the Jews, the Christians refused to participate in civic rituals that would propitiate the gods of Rome and keep the wrath of Roman gods from harming them. So everyone in Rome had civic responsibility. So it didn't matter if you believed in Egyptian gods because you were, you know, from Egypt. If you were in Rome, you had to participate in these civic rituals that would propitiate the Roman gods. That is, prevent them from getting angry and upset and wreaking havoc on Rome. And the Christians refused to do that. And so they called them atheists. They called them atheos because these were people that simply refused to be to observe the religion of Rome. They simply refused to practice. It wasn't because they thought that they didn't believe in God. So that's my understanding of it. I have this on the authority of a classicist who reads the original languages.
So it was originally used for both, just like we colloquial definition.
Well, it wasn't that they it wasn't that they lacked belief in any gods. It's that they didn't believe in any specific gods. And that they refused to participate in civic rituals. And in the case of Socrates in Plato's Apology, it would appear that the allegation is that Socrates has been spreading impieties, falsehoods about the gods. Not that he didn't believe in the gods necessarily, but that he spread falsehoods and is corrupting the youth.
Okay.
So it's entirely unclear exactly how they understood it. We have some idea, but it certainly wasn't what we mean by it and what it came to mean for the last few centuries.
Okay. Anyone else? No? Okay. I sent you, I hope I'm saying this right, Cafe, you can ask, if I know you had some things to say, but you can, if you want to tag me in the chat, I'll ask your question since we couldn't get your audio to working. I'm not sure what's going on with that, but hopefully next time we'll have that figured out. Okay. Erato is your muse. Steve, where's my date? So they paid for that, that $1.50, Steve. Take you up on the date.
Fly me out there. Yeah. Well, I didn't say I was paying. That's on there. I just said I'd go out with them. Yeah. Technicalities here.
So Kaveh's statement is an even greater example is that Zeus wasn't believed by the Greek philosophers of the time, Plato, Socrates, Aristotle, and what culminated in what Plotinus called the one was that what they believed.
That I think is fairly accurate about what. Yeah, I think that's fairly accurate. Well, I mean, probably accurate about what Socrates believed in Plato. They would sometimes talk about the god as if there was one. So it's very possible that they were moving away from a polytheistic conception of God towards a more monotheistic one.
Cool. Stephen Steen, Mr. GIF man. Hopefully, Stephen, with as many GIFs as you make, I hope you say it GIF, not GIF. That would really affect our relationship. He says, hashtag smug Steve. Reed Charbonneau says that he claimed that Steve's position takes away from the nuance when it's quite the opposite. No big name will debate this because they know they are wrong, Matt. Uh-oh. Neil, the 604 atheist. Kyle, I'll message you again after the party. Matthew Walker. Hey, Matthew, we need to get you back on. For some CGI stuff. Stephen Kyle, when will you learn philosophy is CGI? Nice. 0132132. I disagree with Steve, but why are so many of the counter arguments so bad? Twitter, stop, please. Rapid X, don't say firm. Steve, what were you thinking? Facepalm. Kuyasa, the leniency we grant to everyday discussions does not justify ignorance. The need for stricter definitions when it's required. Normalization doesn't mean dumbed down. Johan Roderick says, I am a unicorn. Don't label me. I am a unicorn, meaning he's not a unicorn, like atheist. Drunken Cow says, beta. Always one. Always one beta. Biblical history skeptics. This dude hurts my non-existent soul. Not sure who that's in reference to. Ben Lawrence, if you want to know if a rock is atheist, don't be rude. Just ask it. Oh, that's nice.
Don't assume their rock's position. Yeah.
Drunken Cal, everyone needs Tom's chair to just relax a tad. I think that's excellent. That's my favorite one. Okay. Steve, do you have any, you said that you were going to say something towards the end. We're at the end.
I'm just going to leave it this. I think that what needs to be established is that whether you agree with me or not, I don't think something that people really should be disagreeing with is how these terms are used actually in the literature and best understood to be in the literature by literature itself. I don't think that's something that's really up for much debate. And I think that if that's the only thing that I get across in these discussions, then I'm fine with that. Cause that was the intention of the debate that I had with Duke, that I want atheists out there to recognize that some of these atheist channels are not putting out all the information when they're saying things like atheism is just merely a lack of belief and there's no other things to it. They're putting out misinformation. They're putting out their narrative and in their little communities, that may be the way it is, but that certainly is not how it is in philosophy. It's certainly not been in the last couple hundred years. It is not that the theists are trying to change these terminologies. It's not that I'm trying to change these terminologies. These have the way that the word has been best understood for 300 years. I have dictionaries going back to 1700s that support this. It is a movement that was put forth by Anthony Flew in 1972 by the presumption of atheism, and has been continuing ever since by new atheists to try to get the narrative that atheism is merely just a lack of belief. And they're allowed to do that. That is a political reasons for that. That is a political agenda. The American Atheist is a political organization. That they're not a philosophical one. And they've even said, don't take us as a philosophical source. Their editor-in-chief, Pam Whistle, has said, and Kyle can verify this, that they have two agendas, to increase the membership and to normalize atheism. It is not to be a philosophical citation. So my whole goal, I love Pam. Pam is a sweetheart. Yeah, we needed her back. She was great. And she was so honest about that, too. She was just like, yeah, don't quote American Atheist for philosophical things, because it's not a philosophical source. They are a political agenda driven community. And that changes the narrative quite a bit. So I just want to be out there that people need to understand everything I put out, I believe, is very consistent with the philosophy, the understanding of philosophy. We have all these philosophers that come in and can corroborate that. And you can go look at the evidence. So I don't think that should be really something that should be even that much in disagreement with people. I think the only people that disagree with that are the atheists that have only been exposed to what they hear on certain atheist channels. They have never been exposed to the fact that atheism is held to be something else in academia. And that's a problem. So my whole goal is only to be exposing atheists to the fact that the its narrative that atheism is only a lack of belief is only in small atheist communities and atheist organizations. It's not held to me into the literature to be that. And I would make the argument that even in the general public, it's not generally held, from my personal anecdotal evidence. So
save yourself. Listen, if you want to save yourself having this entire argument, just become anti-theist like myself, and you will be grounded in exactly what. Huh?
You could be a theist anti-theist. You want to be you want to be an atheist anti-theist.
I'm going to end tonight on a, probably since we got so deep into this was deep subject matter, and I feel like in order to motivate you guys to be like for tomorrow, I have a speech that I read all the time when I need some a little oomph, and I'm going to read that to you. It's by Fearless Motivation. So I didn't write it, even though I would have loved to, but I figure I would end on this and give you guys some inspiration for whatever you guys have going on tomorrow, whenever. You owe it to yourself to be great. Some say that's selfish. Some might say they owe it to their family to be there for them. But let me tell you something. You owe it to your family to set an example of someone who lives the life that they want to live, a strong example of a strong human being. You owe it to everyone you love to set an example of what a great life looks like, so they can follow in your footsteps. Settling for less? No, it stops with you. Accepting average? It stops with you. Strength, courage, determination, and a beautiful life. All of that starts with you. You can't help anyone until you help yourself. And when you make you strong, that strength will spill over to everyone else. They will be inspired by you. They will follow your example. Some say to focus on yourself is selfish. I say to settle for a mediocre life you hate is selfish, because that will be replicated for many generations to come until someone says, enough is enough, I am more than this. So you owe it to yourself to see how far you can go in life. You owe it to yourself to earn the kind of money you want to earn. You owe it to yourself to be the kind of person you want to be, to feel the energy you want to feel, you to have the body you want to have from doing the work you know you're capable of doing. You owe it to yourself to feel that pride. That was the moment I decided no more. I decided no excuses. You have to decide that never again will you settle for less. You will work. You will ask. You will learn. You will not stop at hurdles. You will not stop at setbacks. And you will persist until you win. You owe it to yourself and no one else. And on that note, good night.
Bye.